aboard, you people, to Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis. So yes. For another day of broadcast insolence.
Happy Tuesday, everyone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Very excited to hear from our pal Ben Bradley in a short while here, who we were mocking for how he writes so many letters to prison people.
Yeah.
People in prison.
Yes. It's true. So
we want to hear from him. And he was on double super secret suspension yesterday. So we also want to hear about what he did with his day off and if he's learned anything from his mistakes.
Yes. That is exactly right.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
He's not. We're just spreading a vicious rumor.
But that's what we do.
That's fun
here.
About
we
Ben.
We start vicious rumors about people on television that we really love. That we love.
Truly.
And we got one guy fired last week. That was bad.
What?
Yeah, you weren't here for that.
Oh, gosh.
Ben and I were making fun of a colleague in television. We both worked with and actually personally adore. And then literally while we're talking about him, he got fired.
Oh.
And so we got...
It wasn't you.
I
was
the news broke minutes after you guys mentioned his name.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, minutes.
It was
on
you.
Social media.
Yeah.
It was your
fault.
Right,
people went nuts on us on social media because it was like, you just killed him! But he'll have more of a good run. He's an excellent broadcaster.
Good.
That it is what it is.
Good to hear.
This is we don't want to have businesses. All right, coming up on the program, as I mentioned, Ben will be here in just a few minutes, and then we got a 3-star general who's going to be stepping in.
Nice.
To talk to us, which is going to be
that's a big deal. Kind of a big deal.
And he's going to make Kevin do push-ups.
Oh boy.
We're going to do a recruitment thing with Kevin.
Embarrass me in the studio.
After the late night at the Hawks you guys had, I'm not sure anybody could do push-ups. I didn't know you could stay midnight. I wasn't sure that was...
I'm trying to turn your microphone off so you won't talk about it.
We behave completely just fine.
Good. I'm glad to see that you represented us very well.
It's okay, Anna. I babysat.
She did.
Thank you, Lauren.
We had to behave because Lauren, it was the first Hawks game, you know, with the show, and we didn't want to embarrass Lauren, so we behaved last night.
If anything, I was the embarrassing one because I cannot control myself as a fan watching the Hawks.
Right.
And I made really goofy noises and expressions. I don't know how to explain it.
At one point...
I can explain it if anybody wants to explain it. Yeah, no, she's very into it, and she's awesome. She does the thing that I think a lot of sports fans do. When you're watching again, hockey, you do it. Football, you do it for sure. Baseball, a little less because the action is very predictable in baseball. You know, the motion. But there's moments where she contorts her body like, oh, wait, no, come on.
That's awesome.
Sort of it doesn't like that. Help that I add in my Charlie Brown scream. I'm like, ah.
When they scored a goal late with about 2 minutes to go to tie the game, I high-fived Lauren. I don't think you realize you did this, but my hand is still sore. You squeezed it so tight, you like broke my knuckles. I'm like, all right, she's really into this.
I was like, oh my gosh.
And then after the way it ended, which was frustrating, yeah, Lauren was like lifeless, just completely devastated. I'm like,
I sunk pretty far down into that chair.
So did you get to go to that little door that just opens up and suddenly there's a really cool like bar back there and that kind of thing? Did you get to see the secret doors and all that stuff?
Man, I saw a lot of things I had never seen there before, so maybe that's
you did.
Was one
that
of the
was
things.
The secret one. We also went to like 5 different bars and like places you didn't.
That's unusual.
Sure exist,
so. How weird.
It's true.
The Rokan
experience.
Way. Yeah,
I actually at one point I had to go take a breather. I went behind the secret door for like a period and a half while they went, you know, the kids, they can go out and you know, they're just
they don't feel it the next day.
No, and they're running the concourse of the United Center and upstairs in the BMO Harris suite and all of that BMO Harris Club, I guess they call it. Mm-hmm. Right. And the next thing you know, they're coming down at the very end after it's all over, and he was like dragging her through like she just missed the team. It's like one of those things where, you know, those commercials where the kid doesn't make the team and then you take him to McDonald's or whatever.
Right. I'm like, come on, let's
feel
go get
better
a drink.
Right. And it's now everything's gonna be okay. So Kevin brought her back down into the secret bar, and then it was all very good. And there were a lot of people down there who were very excited about her being on the show. How many fans did she already have in that bar last night?
That's
That was pretty amazing.
Took over the room.
Yeah.
Nice.
So
no big deal.
Well done, Lauren.
Lauren's a star already. No big deal.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy. So, all right. And don't forget, if you'd like to see this crap being made live, we are going to be at Harry Carey's a week from tomorrow, broadcasting live for the 21st annual Worldwide Toast to Harry Carey, Wednesday, March 27th, 4 to 7 p.m. Prohibition era theme party, 100th anniversary of Prohibition. So come dressed to impress in 1920s attire. I have just been shown our costumes for the event. I know it's a radio show, but yet we somehow still have to wear costumes.
Well, there's a lot of social media that goes along with an event like this.
Sure.
Are you kidding?
I like the look. I like this.
You guys are going to dress up like gangsters.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Or you gangsters.
I am too. Yeah.
I didn't see the costumes. Lauren, did you see the costumes?
Yeah, I did. I did see the options that I got to choose from.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm very excited because I went with the obnoxiously like lime green one.
Oh,
so I hope it works out.
Yes, we all do, actually, and nobody gets arrested. And the and I already saw yours too.
Oh,
yeah, well, you kind of dressed sort of it's kind of an interesting thing. It's a little bit of sort of a Bonnie and Clyde look for you.
Oh, okay, I like that. That sounds good.
Kind of a good sort of Diane Keaton meets Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh.
So it's very fashionable. Somehow you're going to be fashionable, and the rest of us are going to be what we're going to be. All right, and Ryan Dempster is going to be there. He's the Toastmaster General right there, WGNradio.com/events. And it's all brought to us by our dear friends at Budweiser. Ben Bradley joins us. But first, Kim, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
No taking off for the woman known as the serial stowaway.
And then there's this. When it comes to the weather, we all want to know, what did Skilling say? Watch for updated forecasts from Chicago's most trusted meteorologist. That's Tom Skilling, weeknights on WGN-TV.
Ben Bradley joins us from the WGN-TV newsroom. Hello, Ben.
I was just looking at that live picture of the Chicago River behind you. It's still got a hint of green in it.
Yeah, it kind of gets sort of yucky green on the third day, it
well,
turns out.
Well, I think
out.
It usually is yucky green. Yucky green brown.
Right.
It still has a hint
of flair. By the way, that was my name in the 1970s when I was an actor. Yucky green brown.
I don't want to see that film.
No, it was something.
Ew.
Yeah. No.
No thanks.
Robert Kraft loved it, though. Mm-hmm. Gave it two thumbs up.
Hey, looks like he might get away with it.
Yeah, they say they'll drop the charges, right, if he admits he would have been found guilty of soliciting prostitutes.
But thus far, he has refused to admit guilt. So the question is, do you fight it? Or do you roll over and say, okay, I'll do 100 hours of community service and pay a fine?
And if you risk it, there's a chance the video surfaces.
Let me tell you something. If he rolled over again, this would have never happened in the first place.
You know, I do have a question about that. And I have,
oh, my God.
Not that. About the story.
Yeah. Okay.
How come we haven't seen an outcry from, like, the NFL or from, you know, somebody who say, oh, we have some standards of conduct for our owners, et cetera, for those affiliated
because if this were a player,
with the league, yes.
It would have been a different story.
Right.
But don't they operate under code of conduct as part of the union and part of their contracts?
Well,
that they
so do
have,
the owners.
The owners
under the charter of the NFL.
Yeah.
For sure. Remember, you've had owners get in trouble for things in the NFL.
Right. And I would think that, you know, just as, you know, when a new group wants to jump in and buy an NFL team, part of the due diligence process that the NFL loves to be holier than thou about is that they stand up and say, well, we want to make sure that this particular potential owner, you know, is of good, upstanding character. And they vet these ownership groups.
Well, I agree. It should be done. I guess it's unsurprising.
Or has the NFL been silent on him?
That's a great point. You haven't heard much from them.
What's Roger Goodell going to do?
Really?
Roger Goodell's, excuse me, hello, international media. I would like to publicly claim that Mr. Robert Kraft was a very, very, very bad boy and deserved a spanking, which was extra, of course, at the Orchids of Asia.
The National Center of Sexual Exploitation did send a letter to him asking him to ban him from teen ownership if he's found guilty. Or I guess if he pleads guilty.
Well, and are they going to suspend him like they would? Now, they've suspended other... That means you can't go to games and you can't take part in NFL stuff. And there's... Isn't the Rules Committee... what's going on? That's coming up, right? The Rules Committee vote in terms of... Because they change 16 things a year in the NFL.
But Anna makes a great point. If this had been a player caught up in this, the team probably would have suspended him, right? The league would have...
They suspended Tom Brady for far less than this. For 4 games, as I recall.
Well, same concept.
Not bringing it back to him.
I was going to say.
No correlation. I mean, think about it. It's bizarre. I think they do need to answer to it.
I don't know. I don't know why. I mean, why is Robert Kraft getting a pass? Is it because he's Robert Kraft? Because he wins all these Super Bowls? Because he's a super rich guy? Because he's a friend of the president? Because the woman who owned the founder of the Orchids of Asia chain, Tokyo Nights, or whatever it's called, which, you know, that...
I think that was another movie you were in the 70s,
it was.
Wasn't it?
That's when I was Yucky Brown Freeman, or whatever my name was. Anyway, the point is that it is a good question.
And you also want to wonder, if how often are regular folks offered this kind of a deal? And maybe it's common, I don't know, but it feels as if there's some sort of special treatment. Is that possible?
You know, I think, well, so they offered that deal to everybody who got swept up in this particular case.
Because they didn't want to go to court with them.
For first-time offenders. And so that's the whole issue is, you know, is this your first time? Do you have a history of this sort of conduct?
All right, Pac-Man Jones, this happened to him. This would not, he would... Pac-Man Jones go away for 50 years for this.
It's probably, it feels a little hinky.
Yeah. Oh.
Hinky. Is that how
Hank.
It feels?
Hank. She said hink.
Hank.
Oh,
yeah.
Hinky.
Yeah.
Okay.
Crafty.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Roger Goodell technically works for all the NFL owners. So obviously, I'm sure there's been some communication between the two.
Yeah, and I'm sure, right. That's true. I guess they all police each other. Is that what we're supposed to expect?
I could just imagine what Robert Kraft would say to Roger Goodell,
right,
which, again, would be extra if he were to get into the Orchids of Asia. So, all right. What else you got coming up?
Well, we're keeping an eye, obviously, on this Supreme Court decision involving former Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke. The state's high court today rejecting a bid from Attorney General Kwame Raoul and the special prosecutor to take another look at that six...
that was fast, wasn't
in
it?
In three quarters, yeah, your prison sentence.
Kwame Raoul, I think, was very clearly... You know, this is just started. This is an opportunity to sort of make a political splash and let that resonate out there. And they just quickly were like, no.
Well, you know, he in the attorney general speaking right now is just listening to his news conference. He, of course, denies that, you know, politics played any motive in him taking this to the state Supreme Court. And, you know, the two dissenting state Supreme Court justices here did write pretty clearly that they think the trial judge, Vincent Gaughan, a respected jurist, acted improperly. And this all goes back, you remember that kind of tortured, meandering, if you will, decision that the judge read just before he announced Van
right.
Dyke's sentence? This whole issue of, do you get sentenced for second-degree murder? Do you get sentenced for aggravated battery? The bottom line, the trial judge in the case went with the lesser of two offenses. And that's how this officer, despite taking...
I want to just refine that a little bit. He went with the lesser sentenceable offense.
That
he went with the... He started with the offense that gets the most lenience in sentencing.
Correct. And the two dissenting Supreme Court justices said that is the opposite of what a trial judge is supposed to do. And Kwame Raoul, the attorney general, just said a moment ago, you know, that the trial court judge is not free to ignore a law that's already been settled by the state Supreme Court on this. But bottom line,
Nothing's going to happen.
The sentence is going to stand because there's nowhere else for the AG or the special prosecutor in this case to go.
Right. All right.
So we're covering that for you. The other story we are covering, we're out in Naperville taking a look at the mayor's race out there. Some celebrities hit the picket line with those striking Chicago Symphony Orchestra musicians.
Oh, thank you for referring to me as a celebrity, Ben.
Well, you know what? You can be included in that if you want to run over and picket at 220 South Michigan.
Do you have to play an instrument while you're doing it?
Yes.
Oh, I think Anna should go. We should feed her a twinkle little star.
Lane Tech, Anna.
Oh my God! As we all recall, at a show outing, which you know
usually involves the consumption of alcohol.
It did, and not mine no more than anyone else. I will point out.
For the record, you're not the only one who gets drunk and plays the violin.
Right.
I think I was drunk. I was just happy and enjoying myself, and the guy I was talking to, this lovely violinist, and he was
strolling violinist at the restaurant,
and he came over and he said you want to try it? You try it. And I was like, okay. And I got up and I played Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, and people liked it. Okay. They did. They stood up and applauded the whole room, right, Kim? Please, someone pack me
absolutely.
Up.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They were so pleased.
Your opening song is Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. I think that says as much about your
development
as a musician.
That's all I had,
12 years of Suzuki lessons.
At least. Isn't that sad? I was in the Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra, and that's all I could come up with.
And she only showed up in the days of Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. Can we have that, Brian?
Please don't. Oh.
It's so worth it. Well, this is, you could go to the picket line and you could play this.
You would fit right.
Yeah. Hey,
you may get hired as a scab to cross the line. They're looking for people to play. Right?
I think they shut the symphony down at that moment.
And tonight, in a one-night-only engagement, Anna De Vellantis playing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, directed by Riccardo Muti.
All right. I think we're going.
It was all I had. Ben, but I still enjoyed it.
More than Ro and I had, so
yeah, that's
we give you credit.
Right, that's true. I'm telling you something. I am a badass on the triangle. Do they need the triangle? Ding.
That would work. That's important. Percussionists. They need good percussionists. Mm-hmm. People who can do that kind
right
of
thing. Right now, Ro and I are Googling what instrument of percussion is.
I know that. I'll be able to talk symphony with everyone.
Yeah,
you should hear Ro read the symphony promotional materials on air. Especially when he hasn't pre-read them, Ben. He just sort of goes for it.
Names.
Yeah, he's got it.
It's particularly great.
Butchering there.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
La Traviata playing this week.
We've got Traviata?
Is that how it
no,
comes
no, no,
out?
No, no, no. Oh, my God. Traviata. That would love that.
La Boheme.
They always have a group of artists, visiting artists, mm-hmm. coming from far and distant lands, mm-hmm. with names that have no vowels in them.
Right.
And I have no idea what to do when there's a V, T, C, H, mm-hmm. L, V, Y, and K next to each other. And you're like, how am I going to do that without making it sound, you know, particularly bad? Did you hear that crowd? I mean, that whole room went nuts.
Mm-hmm. Let's do this at the Toast to Harry.
And it was a packed room.
It was like big families eating at like 10-person tables and mm-hmm. stuff, and they liked it.
Be sure to bring that demo reel out there when you go to the CSO this afternoon.
Oh, gosh. Right, I'll see you guys out with the triangles, okay?
Did you say that the celebrities are doing this, though?
So not only did you have a lot of Democrats from the Illinois Congressional Delegation out there today picketing with those musicians, but I believe there were actors from Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, and whatever other shows are shot in Chicago.
All right.
That have Chicago in the name.
The Shy. Yeah.
The Shy-Diderod.
Yeah.
Yep.
Was William H. Macy out there?
I did not see
it. It'd be a good time for him to get to Chicago and like march in something, you know, with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra.
Get some good pub out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
I have no idea how that kid got into college. I never spoke to her. This is why in Hollywood you need to get divorced when the kids are 10.
Exactly.
So you don't have to worry about
the ex-wife. Right.
Exactly. All right. Thank you, Ben.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
We'll see you on the
WGN-TV News at 4, 5, 6, 9, and 10. Let us check now with Kim Gordon. She's got the WGN News brought to you by Townstone Financial. In the house.
Not just the Army.
No.
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 No, no, no.
No, 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 no. That's right. Lieutenant General is with us, Joseph Anderson.
Yes.
And he is, it says right here, certified badass. I think the Army wrote that, General. I hope that that's...
It's a very true statement.
I will bet. He's got that look in his eyes.
Yeah,
too, that,
you better believe it.
You just do not. This is not the kind of guy you want to say no to, or can, I don't think, say no to.
No, you cannot.
No. And you got your airborne with you here as well.
I have supporting troops in case you guys get out of control.
Yes, I understand. How are things going in the Army?
Very well. The Army got to grow a little bit. The Army's getting to modernize. The Army's training to different standards to get ready for different adversaries, and it's well-resourced to do it. So we're a pretty good place.
Let's talk about that, because there's a lot of conversation now about budgeting, and obviously the president wants significant more budget being spent. You often will hear guys at the Pentagon bristle from that, because there are programs that they, you know, that certainly some programs are more favored by certain generals than others along the way here, right? We all know that story. But in terms of the next war we have to fight, the places we actually have to be, what does the Army see as a really necessary set of needs here?
This is all about lethality and being able to, you got to be able to match ranges. You've got to be able to see your adversaries. You got to worry. You got to control airspace. You got to figure out how you work networks in degraded environments. It's kind of scary when you got to talk on a radio, and if you squeeze the handset and you can't talk because you're denied.
Yeah,
that's a different way of how you have to operate, and it's different resiliency in our platforms, in our weapons, and how you make sure you can actually conduct operations in those kind of environments.
Technology obviously is changing
huge.
A ton here.
Huge.
And also space capabilities and things like that. And that's a little bit of what you're talking about here, to make sure that there's redundancy. So your troops on the ground at any given moment, if they have to, there's a bunch of different ways that they can communicate with each other.
You'll hear the buzzword multi-domain operations, but how do you make sure between space and cyber and all domains, it's the extension of air land battle, but it's more than just a tank on tank, an artillery piece. It's right. How do you operate in.
So new recruits are going through a different training. How dramatically different would you say it is than, say, 10 years ago, someone entering the Army?
They bring a different skill set than I did. So, you know, based on the gaming they do, I just talked to a bunch of cadets this afternoon. I just came from recruiting station. So today's the amount of volume, the speed of information, how many things are just like the screens in front of you. Mm-hmm. All that stuff is pumping you what an air picture is, what a ground picture is, where all your disposition of forces are. And today's youth coming in are much more adapt, agile, because of how all the stuff they got to play with. But they are very comfortable keeping pace with that much information being pumped to them, which is much different than a guy like me, which just had a map, mm-hmm. a compass, and
nobody, think about that.
Gun, something.
I,
you hope
I could have been a Attila the Hun, but you're just plotting stuff across a map, and you can see as far as a pair of binoculars will let you see. Where today, all these vehicles, all these aircraft have all these optics. And you can see forever, and you have much better situational awareness.
Where were you first stationed?
Fort Polk, Louisiana.
Ah, and then when an overseas assignment, where did you go?
I went to there from Panama, mm-hmm. and then I came back to the States and went to a Ranger battalion in Fort Lewis, and ended up jumping back into Panama for just cause to chase Noriega for a while.
Oh,
And that was a lot of fun.
Yes, that was a lot of fun. That is, by the way, one of the great made-for-cable movies of
all times,
the Noriega movie. Let's talk about, because a lot of the conversation that's going on in between the military journalism and then the military sort of think tank community is the difference between kinetic and cyber war. Kinetic war is, you know, what we know, which is, you know, bullets and bombs and things like that. There is a growing theory here that if there were to be another global conflict, that the global conflict would really be about blinding. It would really be about creating a cyber attack on the United States, which would shut down electrical grids and ATMs and all of our logistics systems.
Commerce.
Yes. And that's and then the country gets to get invaded in total chaos without destroying the buildings.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So where are we on that in terms of our self-defense, and where's the Army's role in that?
We're the leading proponent for the Department of Defense on all things cyber. It's called it's creating a persistent cyber training environment. But how are we teaching commanders to understand how to operate both from a defensive and, again, from an Army perspective? It's how do you harden, resilient, both everything from installations to platforms? But I think the bigger issue here is how are you you just said it very well. How are you teaching commanders today? When I was a guy invading Iraq, when I went back as a brigade commander, you had to blow stuff up to shut it down. The key is, and it is an authorities issue, but mm-hmm. how are commanders now enabled to shut down a power grid without blowing anything up? Water grid? How do you pick locks on cyber encrypted doors? How do you control cameras like in a city like Chicago? How do you get to remotely control your street cameras so you know what's going on without having to, when you physically can't see it? And that's a whole different way of fighting that we have to keep trying to present those opportunities to our leaders.
Do you feel as though the focus is proper on that?
I do.
And that the money is going
well.
The
money. The challenge here is how do you play catch up? You talk about these gaps, and how do you modernize everything we're talking about, from hardening platforms to making them cyber resilient? The dollars required to move different capabilities, technologies, and playing catch up is a challenge.
General, let's talk a little bit about Afghanistan, because I know that you have a great experience there and longest war in American mm-hmm. history. What is your perspective on what these two decades have been?
Kind of unnerving. I mean, it's It's a difficult problem set. And again, it ends up, as you're watching the reconciliation efforts at the end of the day, if an agreement cannot be made with the Taliban and how they, and based on what they control there now, if you can't bridge that gap, and again, that has to involve, that's got to be, Afghanistan has to be part of that solution. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you know, it's once again, what do the people of Afghanistan want? What's that government look like? They are a constitution-based government. But again, the challenges with that governance over there has been the long pole in the tent since day one.
Well, and is it the issue of communication, too? Because you have disparate groups of people
correct.
Throughout the country that are not necessarily in contact with each other.
That's correct.
To form consensus, there isn't a national media. There isn't a national. These are literally tribal chieftains.
That's correct. You know, from an ethnic, tribal, even sectarian piece, you get all those factor in. But what you just said is based on which part of the country you're talking about, their knowledge, awareness of what current day operations and current day conditions are in Kabul, if you're up north or down south, you know,
right.
It could, like the Grand Canyon, there's a big gap there and they just don't understand it.
The great empires, the British, the Russians, everybody has tried
correct.
At some point to tame that land, but it, part of it is about the terrain too, isn't it? It's just an impossible place to create an infrastructure.
It's a beautiful country, but it's a hugely complicated country. But you know, it is, the mountains are huge. You know, the deserts are far and wide, and it's a complicated terrain, both environmentally, geographically, mm-hmm. and socioeconomically.
All right, and Iraq. Now, obviously, between Syria, Iraq, Iran. All the things that are happening in the region, and now you're seeing a bit of a flare in the conflict between the Gaza and what's happening in Israel. Are there solutions there?
I believe there are, but it requires a consolidated international approach versus a fragmented international approach. You know, the more players that get in the pot, as you watch what Russia does, what Iran does, what Turkey does, the more complicated and fractured the approach is going to be. That's going to continue to allow that environment to fester.
How important is NATO to this whole process?
NATO, as you know, is mostly a European focused, and based on what's happening in Eastern Europe, that's probably a good thing. You mm-hmm. know, and as you look at the enhanced forward presence and everything that's happened from the Baltics on down to Poland, which is we are with the Canadians, the British. The Germans, that's a pretty strong statement about a defensive line in the East. And I think given what's happening in that part of the world, NATO's role there, that's probably where their focus should be.
Are there misconceptions? I guess, what are the challenges when it comes to recruitment? Are there misconceptions about what the job entails today? Do you find that that's true?
I do. I think the Army in the Department of Defense, probably writ large, are very misunderstood by folks because they hear all the deployment stories. They still see casualties. Mm-hmm. They know they're going to be gone away from home. And when you're competing with, about a 3.6 today unemployment rate,
right.
and where people pay a lot more, lot better pay on the outside than we pay in the military, that exacerbates the problem.
There are special skills. I mean, obviously, there's a lot that the Army offers. And
we do. The Army, from a career perspective, I think, again, from a technical, developmental, educational perspective, nobody beats it. But I think, again, as service and giving to a cause bigger than you, but I think how you actually watch it change lives and coming in the Army will make you a stronger, more resilient, more capable person. And I think employers realize that, and that's one of our competitions when they draw from us, because a soldier will come to work, a soldier will be healthy, they will work a full day, they'll stay committed, they'll mm-hmm. give it their all, they're smart,
right.
you know, and so
problem solving. You're teaching,
right.
the modern military teaches these young men and women to assess the problem and solve it.
Correct.
Right? And
that's
it's
right.
a very, you know, I remember when the Army did an Army of One, which was, to me, as a marketing guy, I think I understood what they were trying to do. The idea, the mission was totally right, but it sent the wrong signal. Like, everybody's going to do their own thing. The idea, though, is that each soldier is capable of solving the problem for him or herself and those around, you know,
right.
all the people around.
As part of a team.
Yes. Them. And to me, I just, you know, we always are very diligent about looking when we're looking for people who have military experience, because you do, for all the reasons you just said, they come to you so in a level of preparedness that you do not find with the average candidate. you know, because they've got this sense. No one's going to give up. The idea of giving up is trained out of you.
That's right. No, you're a very resilient person, but you're dedicated to, you know, this is mission accomplishment. And none of us, and again, the average Army person is a very competitive type A, you know, athlete, yeah. You know, and they're determined to win. And it's about winning, not losing, and that's a cultural norm for us.
I want to go back to this because the whole gamer thing is a big deal. I know the Air Force is specifically, and now maybe even the Space Force, as they sort of spool that up. That is going to be, they're looking for people who've got, as you mentioned, screen capability, fast hand reflexes, right. Things like that. Right. You know, drone drivers and the rest. But you guys are looking for that. What do you think the best advantage that kids who are particularly good at video games bring to the Army?
They bring a weird sense of agility that I can't comprehend. You know, I was an athlete, but I don't. Every time my kids ever tried to put one of those devices in front of me, and I tried to coral a different kind of hand eye coordination, if you will, different than it would be with a tennis ball or a golf club. Mm-hmm. You're hitting all these toggles and buttons, but your head is, you're totally mesmerized on the screen in front of you, and their ability to eye-hand on devices, and you mentioned everything you just discussed when you're talking about drones and other things. The issue is how are you actually using that seeker and being able to find what you're looking for, and you're not fixated like I would be on this box right here. So that's what I think.
Don't tell your troops that, General. Don't ever tell them.
I won't tell them.
No, don't show any weakness, General. That's a bad idea.
I'm too old to be weak. So anyway,
I'm guessing he's not weak at all.
But that's a skill I just don't have, and so I'm sorry.
It is interesting though, because you know it's funny because you know parents get pretty agitated about their kids growing up with screens and they're constantly doing it.
And you're taught
to tell your kids put down their screens, right?
Right.
You pay attention. Be with me. Be in the moment. Talk to me. Look at me.
It's a skill, though, that I know that there's a lot of, a lot of guys in the Pentagon, in those Skunk Works parts of the Pentagon where guys are thinking, great thoughts, are they're focused on that because they realize that, as we're talking about, the next wars will be Connecticut, but will be at standoff, right? Yep. They're going to be, the warfighter may actually be, as they are now, thousands of miles away from the battle,
right.
But still kinetically impacting
the
battle.
That's right.
And then you're going to have the people who are, and then the cyber threat that really is.
That's huge.
That's where the next thing is, coding and all that.
But all things artificial intelligence, robotics, autonomous systems. You know, and as I travel around and ask a lot of technocrats, I mean, do you foresee the day that a machine will actually make the decision of a human, and in our case, like clearing fires to target something? Yeah.
And what's the answer?
Well, I'm very scared about pulling the human link out of that, but I think the way things are going is probably inevitable. But ultimately, it's a judgment call, and I'd have to have better confidence that a machine could actually make that judgment. But it may have more knowledge than I would.
We're not there yet.
Knowledge and then the morality of the warfighter.
That's the engagement. You're right. Geneva Hague Convention. Then the question becomes, are you going to take out 10 innocent kids when I try to shoot you? So,
which is what we run into now when we client state out some of the weaponry and we see how that gets used, and then we're like, well, that's not how we would use it. And next thing you know, you've got Congress all up in arms and, you've got to fire somewhere. All right. I always have to ask this question. Favorite post?
Hawaii.
Oh, of course.
No follow-up question needed on that.
Yeah, I was just going to guess that.
What were you expecting? I was going to say Fort Polk, were you?
Because they got mosquitoes the size.
Snakes,
of
crocodiles,
Yeah, I guess it's a swamp.
But
yeah.
Good crawdads, yeah.
Yeah, and where in Hawaii were you?
Schofield Barracks.
Oh, yes. Beautiful. Right up in the middle of Oahu.
On Oahu. That's right. Up right before North Shore, before where all the surfing is.
About 10 minutes away from Banzai, which is one of the great little strips of restaurants on the planet. So there you go. You're right about that. Least favorite post?
Fort Polk, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You were going to hope for a decommissioned post before I ask that question, hopefully. You could always go with decommissioned. They closed it. I don't know.
When you said they had good crawdads and that was the big upside, I thought, well, that's something.
There's a lot of stories I could tell you, but I can't tell you out here.
We appreciate that, General.
Being a New Yorker, that was a wild place to get sent.
Where did you grow up?
In Westchester County in New York.
And what drew you to the Army?
My heritage. My father was World War. My great grandfather World War One. My father World War Two. My brother Vietnam, and everybody did it. So I just last.
Do you think you were going to make a career out of
it? No. I had very short horizons, and never thought I would be where I am.
Do you ever think you'd have 3 stars in your lapel?
No.
Gee.
Well, I think if you think that way, you don't do a good job.
Let me ask you a question. Did your brothers ever think you were going to have 3 stars?
I doubt it.
Are they worried about it?
I doubt it. I think they're worried about the years of being gone and what's happened. I'm coming up on 38 years. It's been lots of deployments, lots of time away. There were some really stressful times in the Anderson household with kids, two boys. But my youngest is a lieutenant at Fort Benning now. He followed suit.
Wow.
Wow.
A little bit later, he got in the academy, backed out, and then he ended up coming back and going the OCS route, and now he's down there waiting to go to Ranger school. So
thank you to you and your family for your service. 38 years, Lieutenant General Joseph Anderson, United States Army. Thank you, sir. All right, right now, Kim Gordon, what's coming up at the top of the hour?
Roe, Attorney General Kwame Raoul believes two judges have made mistakes in the sentencing of a former Chicago cop.
Yes. Right here, 720 WGN. Kim Gordon on the news. Kevin.
K-Pow.
What was his last name?
K-Pow.
I always forget him.
No big deal. Powell.
Powell.
Same Kevin as the Fed Powell. Chair.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, he is the Fed chair. He's the sports chair. Is with us. And of course, Lauren Lapka, the newest addition to the radio program on sports and thoughts. And Mr. Tom Skilling, brought to us by Permaseal Basement Systems, of course, is here. As he is every afternoon.
Yes.
At 4 o'clock.
That's right. You know, Ro, they say the recollection of your sportscaster's name is the first thing to go, you know? So
they're like,
all downhill from here.
Kevin, don't help me.
No, he'll get it.
I can identify with this because, you know, my recollection of a lot of things is fading, you know.
You know, there's this guy who comes on after us.
Yes.
You never remember his name.
Jason.
Justin. Still Justin.
Kaufman.
Yeah.
Kaufman. Yes. I forget who he is. Yeah.
You give him a hard time.
I'm sure he's absolutely thrilled at that.
Yeah. They love him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or as Cup used to do. Hi, pal. That way you didn't have to remember anybody's name.
I know.
Pal.
He was a hard worker. Was everywhere.
He was everywhere. Yeah. They did. They had a very interesting life. I was kind of, you know, growing up watching him. He was on radio. He was on television. He had a column, obviously, in the Chicago Sun-Times forever. He was the voice of the Chicago Bears.
Yes.
He and Jack Brickhouse were.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, that is like the coolest job. He was like a jack of all trades. He worked at, and nobody said no to him. He could be at any television station at any time or any radio station. Mm-hmm. And they let up the doors.
Because he knew everything. He had the dirt on everybody.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
Like, sure, you come on in.
Yeah. And everybody knew him. Old Irv got around. Yeah, no question.
Hey, watch it.
I didn't mean that in a bad way.
It sounded bad.
No. Yeah, I know. Yeah. It did come out.
And he was giant. Yeah. He was, you know, as a football player.
Yeah.
And he had to be like 6'5", 6'4", 6'5", and he had these giant hands, and he was just one of those guys. And, you know, you don't see guys who are like that big get that old. But he was constantly
91 when he died.
Right.
Is that right? Yeah. I had forgotten that.
Yeah.
Wow.
6 decades he was a columnist.
Amazing. Yeah. And on top of that, he was very nice. You know, whenever you'd meet him, I was in, you know, the new kid in town, and you'd meet him, and he was always so pleasant. And so was Essie. Same way.
Did he always ask you what you knew about who when he saw you?
No, he didn't.
No. Just wondering.
And I'm telling you, that would have been plowing unfertile ground because I didn't have a lot to tell him. You know?
Yeah.
All right. Well, now I would like to just give you some plaudits.
Oh.
For what has been a very pleasant couple of days, at least when you look outside. It could be a little cooler, but I'm noticing like just everything's a little climb. It's like, you know, just like a little handhold here, foothold there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the good news is, Ro, you're absolutely right. The bad news is I had nothing to do with it. You know?
I know, but you've reported it well.
I know. We did. We're very pleased to have accurately predicted it. It's very nice.
Yes,
gosh,
it is.
That March sun, if you let it do its thing and don't have a wind coming off the lake, it's amazing what it can do, isn't it?
Just in contrast to where we've been, this feels so incredible to be outside.
I know.
Yesterday you were telling us about the Nebraska flooding, but we're also seeing, I've been watching all the cable newsers today, and they're highlighting a lot of Illinois flooding, like in Freeport and the Winnebago County area. You're seeing people go to work and grocery stores and kayaks and their boats, and they've seen flooding they haven't seen in decades.
It's true. The Rock and Pecatonica rivers have been kind of the epicenter of the worst flooding up, you know, toward Rockford and all. Eric Rung was up there yesterday and reporting on it. And, you know, you combine a record snowpack up to the north, and then you rain on it and warm it up briefly, and bad things begin to happen.
I think we forget about the snowpack to our north. Now, we had a snowy winter, above-average snowy winter, but it would come and it would go. You know, we didn't spend weeks upon weeks climbing over mountains of snow here.
No, that's true.
But they did in places like, you know, starting in Rockford and moving way north and west and north, Wisconsin, Michigan, as you mentioned, the Upper Peninsula had 500
Minnesota.
Inches or something like that.
Yeah, oh, it's just over 300.
300.
Yeah.
Still bad.
It is. They've had a terrible winter up there. And what's telling is, you know, the snowmobilers love it, and so do the cross-country skiers. But I even had people writing on social media from Upper Michigan saying, all right, you can turn it off now, you know. And when you start hearing that from folks in Upper Michigan, you know it's been quite a winter.
It's a high threshold for them.
Yeah, because people love snow.
So where is that going to go? So when so 300 inches, when it obviously some of it is melted and reformed, but or evaporated, which was what happens.
Right.
But what is that going to release into the river systems up there? I mean, it's going to be very bad.
Well, it is. And if it rains on it, and of course, you know, when you get in trouble is when you warm up quickly. And of course, that's one of the things that storm last week did. It brought warm air, even as it produced a blizzard out in the western plains. But you bring warm air in very quickly over that snowpack, and then you rain on top of it. And there was a pretty substantial rain that came down. And there's a lot of water tied up in that snow. I know the work they did in this area, the Weather Service hydrology folks out of the Romeoville office, were saying there was anywhere from 0 to 4 inches of water in the snowpack. Obviously, the higher numbers were up north and west in the areas you were talking about. So, you know, you've got that to work with, and you've got meltwater, and wow, it's a mess.
Yeah. Looks like it. Really does.
And what's going on out in, you know, Nebraska and all, they've not seen anything like that. We had that 1993 flood situation that set the Mississippi River out of its banks, and Iowa was referred to as the fifth Great Lake that year because there was so much standing water.
Terrible.
It was terrible. But it didn't extend west with the severity that we're seeing this year in Nebraska. And, you know, like off an Air
when
Force
does this,
base.
When does this recede?
Well, you know, every passing day that we can melt some snow is good up to the north. What's interesting is you look at
it. Is that good or is that bad? I mean, obviously it's got to melt at some point.
Well, I mean, you know, it starts the moisture funneling through the system, but we're not totally done with it yet. And one thing that's happened is the atmospheric river, the Pineapple Express that was hitting California and coming into the central U.S. has shifted. It's going into Alaska this week. So they're going to get 5 to 6 inches of rain on the south coastline up there. But, you know, this atmospheric river will apparently start aiming again at the western U.S. and the Rockies at some point next week. And, in fact, a big storm, they'll come in with that. Should warm us up dramatically. The middle and end of the week. However, after a near 60-degree temperature Sunday, we've got a jarring change back to colder again.
Sunday night,
Monday and into Tuesday. But then an equally dramatic warm-up will follow that. And then,
you're hired again.
I know, but wait a minute. The other shoe drops next weekend. Yeah, so it's up.
Wait, next weekend? You mean the weekend after this upcoming weekend?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what's going to happen there?
Well, that, several of our models, you know, we're out in the extent, you know, the fantasy range on our models, but they're showing a big Canadian high settling in with a storm system on its south side that could put some snow or a wintry mix near us after what could be our first 70-degree temperature the middle and end of next week.
Oh, so. this is exactly what happened in 1974, I think it was. Yes.
How do you remember that?
I do. I remember this well because it was like...
he catalogs these.
March 20th. Yeah, get get Snyder great. On this because I'm telling you right now, I want to say it was either March 31st or March 30th of 1974, and a big snowstorm came through.
Yeah.
And they started playing Christmas songs on the radio.
I remember that. And that was one of those, you know, windshield wiper breakers because it was so heavy.
Heavy and just crazy snow.
And thunder and lightning during
it. And
it
was,
and then it was gone in thunder, a week and a half.
Well, like you were climbing over with April sun, which April sun is like August sun in terms of the angle of the in the sky.
Right.
And so you had this, it was like August with snow on the ground.
Yeah.
It was the craziest thing. It's just, it may be the first time I was traumatized by weather.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, and it all started back then.
Right then. I don't can you look that up? Is it 74 or 73? It was one of those. I was a little.
Hey, Bill?
March what?
You have a recollection.
March 29th, 30th, 31st.
March 29th, 30th, 74, big snow. We'll have to look on that row.
He doesn't know it automatically off the top of his head.
No.
I thought he was like that.
Like, the April 75 storm? Maybe that was it. Okay, yes. All so it was April 1st of 75, maybe?
See, Mr. Snyder, I don't believe, was even around. Right, Bill?
Right.
For that one. Yeah, this is... He wasn't even a gleam in
a gleam in his parents'
his
eyes.
His parents' eyes.
His dad's
eyes. At that point.
Hey, how you doing?
Yes. I told him, I said, if you had to live through the 70s, I don't know that you would have made it, because that
just tells you how old I am right now.
I have an actual
recollection of that from 1975. That was like the last part of the middle of the century of the last century.
I know.
Well, winters, how awful is that?
Those winters from the 50s, 60s, and 70s got progressively worse. We averaged about 38 inches of snow in the decade of the 50s. We went up to 47 the decade of the 60s. And the average annual snow was up to like 54 in the 70s. And then we've come down since then. But had we continued at that rate, we would have moved into the new century with record snows like the 89.7 we got in the winter 78-79, the Jane Byrne Michael Blandick blizzard year. And there were 110-inch annual snow numbers up in our far northwest suburbs, up by the Wisconsin line and just north.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We
that was bad.
So 11 inches at O'Hare on that day.
April 1st. Was it April 1st?
April 2nd at midnight, it started to fall. And then by the next day at O'Hare, they had 11 inches and 10 downtown, or 10 at Midway.
You know what? In fact, I'm going to work on this because I had Richard Koneman, another of our climate gurus here, break out the biggest snows. Now, wait a minute. I'll get them right here in a second.
No, I think I've
here
just,
we go.
I think they've just changed your package right now.
19.2 inches fell March 25, 26, 30. That was our top snow from the state forward. Then on March 31.
What year was that?
That was 1930.
Yes, I was there for that, too.
And then 12.6, March 30, 31, 26. And then in 1965, there was a March 20, 26 storm. Those are the top three I asked Richard to break out. So we're...
My 1975 one that just totally freaked me out in April. But that's an April. That's got to hold the record for April.
I'm sure it does. It's one of the bigger storms. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. That was crazy.
Yeah. I was working up in Milwaukee at the time. And I remember we got nailed up there by that. And I remember hearing about what happened here in Chicago.
Yeah, everybody was. And you know, it was like they'd run out of salt. Remember when we would run out of salt?
Yes.
I remember that growing up. Like, my dad would, like, ration it at certain points in the winter.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, what do you mean? They can't make more salt? I go, how is that even possible?
Well, thank God for FedEx now, because they can deliver it in real time. Real-time deliveries on salt and all the rest.
The world's changed since then.
It really has. It really has, yeah.
Thank God for Amazon.
Yeah.
That's exactly Amazon, what the president just said. All right, Tom, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Rogue, good to talk to you. You too, Anna.
Thanks, Tom.
I like to teach Tom, but weather history in Chicago.
I tell you.
No big deal.
You are, you're a fountain of information, that encyclopedic mind of yours.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and by the way, goodbye to Kevin, too, because I know he's back there somewhere.
What is Kevin's last name again?
He remembers 1975, April 2nd.
There's medication for this. Did you know that?
In its
early stages, anyway. I don't know.
He's been giving me a weird look lately. Like, he doesn't recognize me. I don't know what's going on.
Is that right?
It's worrying me.
Yeah. Kevin, that would be worrisome. I know. I know. But, Kevin, be nice to us, you know?
Oh, I will.
As we get older.
That's right.
As we get older.
Someday you'll be here, too.
I took the kids out last night, to the Hawks game.
Yeah.
And then I let them loose. And I did, like, what my parents would do. I let them loose to run around the concourse while I went and sat at the bar.
Yeah.
Which is what, you know,
it's what you do when your kids get to be a certain age.
Right. And they did. They ran around the concourse and they were all, it was all goofy. Then they came back to the bar, asked for more money, then went back out on the concourse running around.
A little embarrassing to see Kevin out there on the Zamboni.
Things got a little crazy.
I know.
Although we learned about Lauren Lapka, we learned something. She's a very intense fan.
Gotcha.
Very intense fan.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Just a little too expressive.
She's oh, my God!
You know, somebody wrote me on Facebook about, they asked how long it would take to Zamboni Lake Superior, the snow off that. They came up with a figure of 400 years. I don't know.
Let's start now.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, guys, good to talk to you.
Thanks, Tom. You too.
Kind of a geek asked that kind of question. Wait, hold on. That would be me. All right. Thank you, Tom.
Bye-bye, guys.
Let's check in now with Kim. What's happening at the bottom of the hour?
Roe, the FBI had their eye on Michael Cohen long before they raided his home and office.
Then there's this. When it comes to the weather, we all want to know, what did Skilling say? Watch for updated forecasts from Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling, weeknights on WGN-TV.
He just told us, he's here every day at 4 o'clock, and he just told us something very important. It's going to be a roller coaster here.
Boy, is it ever.
It's going to be up to like 60 on Sunday, and then...
Just when you get used to it.
Super cold, then super warm.
Warm again.
And then... snowpocalypse potentially at the next weekend, the weekend after this one. Jeez, how about that?
That like 10 days away.
Hell no.
Not ready for some of that.
I got Blackhawks tickets to give away coming up in just a few minutes. If you want to go see the Hawks take on the Avalanche this Sunday, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing, for all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com. Keep listening for your chance to win tickets all regular season long to Chicago Blackhawks regular season games. We're kind of running out of regular season games. And running out of a little bit of hope. It would have really been nice if they got the tie last night, they got the single point, if they got the 2 points that they won, and the Phoenix Coyotes. I can't believe that we even have to be talking about that franchise, but fine, we are. We have to climb over them. We have to climb over actually two teams.
Three teams.
Three teams.
Coyotes, Wild, and Avalanche.
Yeah.
Coyotes lost, so Hawks are 4 points out. And they do have a game in hand. Minnesota and Colorado play tonight.
Oh, so that's good.
Yeah.
So maybe, but the problem is that if Colorado wins that game, then they climb up, and then we got to climb over them, right?
Right. Well,
but then we can climb over them on Sunday. Right. Not, we can't actually get over. Well, actually, we could get over them on Sunday.
Just win out.
Okay.
Is that so difficult?
Or may I quote Lauren Lapka? Oh, come on!
You got to throw in the hands over the eyes, but making little V's so you could still see perfectly fine.
There's a lot of body English, like a golfer trying to shape a shot. She's like, ooh, I don't know.
I really can't help it. I don't know what's wrong with me. It just happens.
You're passionate.
That's all
like
right.
It. I appreciate
sports
it.
Fans. I mean, that makes sense.
Makes it fun.
Sports fans know. You know, when they were it was funny. I was watching the circus the other day, on Sunday night.
Glad I make you think of that.
And not that circus. And they were interviewing Roger Stone, and they were like, and Roger Stone couldn't talk about the case. He's doing a walk and talk.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, "Well, you like sports? You got a sports fan? Sports teams you like?" He goes, "I don't like sports. People who don't like sports, I do not trust." I just don't trust them because they're into, I mean, I know there's a lot of people who grow up and, you know, there's a gender division between sports fans and non-sports fans. But I find generally sports fans are far more trustworthy than non-sports fans. And guys who don't like sports, I'm going to tell you this right now, not to be trusted. Right? It's guys who they get more of a kick out of being worried about whether a congressman is going to get reelected than they do about
The Bears season.
The Bears season. Right. That's just not
Bears
right.
Bears really is yeah. all that matters.
That's right. Exactly. Because at the end of the day, we can, it, you know, we can all agree on that.
Right. Except Kim.
Right. Yeah. We're not talking.
Packer fan.
We're not talking to Kim.
All right.
Her.
It's the only sport we don't agree on.
So we talked to her most of the year, just not during football That's right. season.
I'm starting now by not talking to her.
No.
Kim Gordon.
It makes it more exciting.
I'm sorry. Not Kim Gordon. Has the news being brought to you by Gilkey Window Company, Packers fan. Rokanjo with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, let me tell you what's coming up. Just a few minutes away from Blackhawks Colorado Avalanche tickets that I've got in my hot little hand right now.
Woohoo!
See, now tickets are, you print them out on your computer, so that's how they sound.
That's how they sound.
Mm-hmm. And then we have got a top five at five, you won't believe, and our political director, John Fritchie, will be here to talk about the mayor's race, where Lori Lightfoot looks like she's running away with it, but are we misreading this? You will answer the questions.
She's got some new ads out this week that show a softer side of her at home with her child. And she's flossing in the background and playing the trumpet. And it's kind of cute.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big ad buy, $300,000. So she is using that to kind
of close
out
more.
Her face.
Buy more.
More advertisements.
It's funny, last night at the Blackhawks game, you'll see this also on Thursday night. We'll be at the Blackhawks game on Thursday night. We're going to be in the concourse there. Plying our trade at the Goose Island Pub. So come by and say hello.
Our normal location.
That a lot of people stop and meet. So who's going to win the mayors? Who's going to win the mayors?
Yeah.
A lot of that last night.
And what do you say?
I said, well, you know, the polls indicate that Lori Lightfoot is definitely the leader here.
Mm-hmm.
But you never know. You just never know until they count all the votes.
Right. She got Chewy to endorse her, Jerry Joyce, and Paul Vallis on this very radio program.
Right.
You remember?
So yes.
You do remember? It was like 5 days ago.
Grandpa, remember? Do you remember? Yeah,
you didn't remember Kevin's last name a few
I was about to call him.
All right,
so here's what happened. It wasn't that I couldn't remember Kevin's last name. I was about to call him because I just saw in the hallway, we have two Kevins here.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like
very confusing.
Opposite
One's
ends
like
of the
20 years older.
Irish spectrum. Okay. It's sort of like the Irish. It's like a before and after picture. These two guys. So it's like so Kevin McDonough, and I was about to call him Kevin McDonough, and I'm like, why am I calling him Kevin McDonough? What I mean, you know, I say Kevin Powell probably more. I say the words Kevin Powell probably more than any other human other than his fourth grade teacher.
So no, they would call
Kevin
him,
Powell.
They would go Mr. Powell, and that's when I knew I was in trouble.
Oh, that's
the
worst.
The Mr. Powell.
Did you go to Catholic school? I can't remember.
No, I grew up in a Catholic church. I didn't go to Catholic school, though.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, okay. Start making fun of it now. Anyway, then I got turned around in my head. I'm like, why am I trying to? And that all of a sudden, I'm thinking, why would I say Kevin McDonough? And then I had that thought, like, you know, you have like a lightning bolt of thoughts in your head,
right?
Where like
and
60
then they all
thoughts
kind of collide
in a half a second, and then 60 thoughts were, oh my god, am I losing my mind? Do I have dementia? I'm like, what did I drink last night?
We were thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, you got a lot of thoughts going through your
I know, I did.
Talk show host. There's a lot of stuff to get to cover.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. Hey, and one of the things I want to cover before we move on to... I do want to talk about... I want to get back to the situation down at the Orchids of Asia salon and
some
day
new
spa.
Developments, yeah. Turns out of the salon.
Yes, I'm
patrons.
Really, Mr. Kraft may
that's,
have...
That totally works there.
Actually done something that I don't know that you should be able to do, but we'll talk mm-hmm. about it in just a second. But let me remind you, if you would like to get, this is a good time to mention a deck, get decked out for summer. You can win a 12 by 16 foot rectangular deck by Archideck of Chicagoland, constructed of TimberTech product. No deck complete without a place to sit, and a price package includes a 3-piece cushion sectional, fire pit table from American Sail, their Bella collection, a Weber Spirit 2 series gas grill from Weber. That's why it says from Weber. And you can also win this makeover by just uploading a picture at WGNRadio.com. /contests. Go there. You'll see the contest for it, and they'll give you the instructions, explain how the whole thing works. Really cool.
Very.
Brought to us by Archideck of Chicagoland.
It will change your life.
Okay. So send us your deck picks. Speaking of that, we move on now to Robert Kraft. Robert Kraft has been offered the deal of a lifetime, and as of right now, unless something just changed on the wires that I have not seen.
No, I don't think anything's changed.
He has not yet accepted it, which is that if he acknowledges that he would have lost a trial.
If he just says he would have been found guilty of soliciting prostitutes from that Florida day spa, Orchids of Asia, he has to submit to an STD test, and he has to take some classes about human trafficking.
He has to examine the material that they found with them and say, yes, that is me.
Oh, no. Oh,
So that's like, that's like, dog makes a mistake in your house. You're like, look what you did. Look at this. And you bring the dog over and show it what it did in the family room. What did you do here, little Rocky?
You made a mess, Robert Kraft. Look at the mess you made.
You look at what you did.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's part of the plea.
Now, he's not married, right? Robert Kraft is never married.
He has a girlfriend. Passed away about 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But doesn't he have some sort of like hot young...
Yeah, one of these
girlfriend
hot,
sort
young
of thing?
Girlfriend sort of things, yeah.
Yeah.
Who got pregnant, and he's like, that's definitely not my kid.
Can't be mine. I got fixed. I didn't tell you that, did I, honey? But he's still got to go over by Orchids for.
He's got to go through 100 hours of community service and small fine for him, $5,000. I mean, he's a billionaire, right? So that's not a big deal.
That's nothing.
He's got to submit to an STD test and take a class on the dangers of prostitution. Because remember, this is a human trafficking case. It's not just a escort service kind of dealio.
Right.
Mr. Kraft, is that you getting the Bobby K special in this video? Can you confirm?
But that's the
danger.
Did
they actually call it the Bobby K special?
I don't know.
In favor of you? Did they name it for you like you got a sandwich in a sandwich shop?
Mr. Kraft, we have multiple evidence here of people requesting the Bobby K special.
Yes. Yes.
Twice in 24 hours, the Bobby Kraft.
Now we're going to watch. That's the first time you got the Bobby Kraft. Now we're going to watch you get the second one.
That's impressive. He's 77.
You got to get the girlfriend shows up and has to watch it with him.
Oh, that's definitely
his age,
him.
It makes me wonder what kind of community service he's going to be doing. Because I always just think of picking up trash along the expressway.
That'd
right?
be good. I'd like to see him in an orange jumpsuit.
Wouldn't that be great?
100 hours of that at 77?
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, wow.
Seems about right. You know what? And the only reason I want him sentenced to anything is for the Super Bowl rings. I really don't care about, this is the kind of thing. These sorts of stings happen all over the country, all the time, and people are sentenced to fairly light sentencing, including... In human trafficking cases, there's a lot of pleading out in human trafficking cases as they try to climb up the mountain of witnesses, because generally human trafficking cases involve other trafficking as well, drug trafficking or organized crime or whatever it is. So the lowest level people tend not to encounter severe penalties. And
which to me is it's a different type of crime, because if you're held against your will, and I mean if he knew that, I don't know that he did, if he had a sense of that.
I'm going to doubt that
there was
some
sort
of that.
It was threatening environment.
It was in Jupiter, Florida, right? I mean he's assuming that everything is beautiful down there, that no, you know, that he's down there and it's and that I my guess is he doesn't have any sense.
Probably not. It just to me that makes it a bigger crime here, because it is the human trafficking piece of things here. But the people who will be paying for that, it seems like, are the owners and the operators and the higher level people who clearly knew that they were holding some of these women, according to the prosecutors, against their will.
And the woman who founded it, who is pictured at Mar-a-Lago and hanging out with Kellyanne Conway and all this other stuff, she's not charged in any of this.
Because I guess she sold it, right? She sold it not too long ago.
But who was she hiring?
I don't know what was going on there? I don't know that there's a record of everything she was doing.
So if you're the Palm Beach County or whatever it is, authorities that are prosecuting this, who do you put in the room with him while he has to watch
Oh, gee.
The videotape, the surveillance video of this?
The new guy.
Other prisoners that need to be punished.
Or a really stern-looking... Oh, you don't want that necessarily, because God knows what the other prisoners... Hey, whoa!
I can't imagine anyone would want to see that for
a second.
Right.
No.
So this is what he has to decide, because if he pleads... If he admits to it, then he's admitting to it. But the video evidence gets sealed up, and it would never get released.
You're the last person to see it.
Right.
You and Nurse Ratched over here are going to watch this together.
So is that true, if he does take this plea deal, that they lock up the video and it doesn't come out?
Yes.
How do you lock up video in the digital world?
DMZ pays a lot of money for that stuff, don't they?
Oh, God.
I mean, some of those entertainment sites, they really will pay out a lot of money for that kind of thing. I don't know. Sometimes those things get out, and they're not supposed to, but they do.
For the love that is all, for the love of everything sacred on this earth, I pray that that video never surfaces.
Right.
I know there's a lot of video you hear about that you go, oh, boy, I'd like to see that. This is not one of them.
I'd like to see that. Not this one.
No.
You think the world's an angry place now.
Yeah, exactly. And you think, and him, they get, everything's tan except for that, and then, you know, it's like, oh, God.
Oh, that's... No.
Oh, no. Because, you know, he's one of those guys who's got the deep tan all the time.
He does.
So he's probably, right before he's getting the Bobby K, he's probably, you know, lying in a tanning booth. All those guys, I mean, the president, him, these guys, they want to bake. They put themselves on a rotisserie, and then, you know...
How do they do that? Is that like a tanning salon tan, or is that
I think that's gotta be a self application.
Okay.
Well, the president does that orange stuff because sometimes he comes out. I noticed that this with Roger Stone.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Roger Stone was using the same orange thing that the president does? It didn't work quite as well
spray
on
tan.
Yeah,
the spray stuff.
Yeah, it's or the foam. Tan.
Like the actual lotion you get at Walgreens.
Yeah, that's kind of, I think that's a little bit of what's going on there, because sometimes the president will come out and he'll only be orange on the front of his face. And not behind his ears
his
or anything like that. Yeah, his neck.
Back of his neck.
Yeah.
Which maybe is just makeup. Maybe that's a makeup problem.
Could be. But then, does he do his own makeup? He must do his own makeup in hair.
I was going to say, if it's not, then he's spending a lot of money on someone who's not very good.
Does he do his own hair every morning?
He's
got to have a person for that.
No. I think he says it. You know, the interesting thing about his hair, he's very self-conscious about it, but he's also at the same time very honest, transparent, if you will, sort of like his hair, about the whole process,
mm-hmm.
you know, that it's a lot of spray and it's a lot. And that is his hair. I don't think anybody can question that.
It's just
anymore.
Like 17 different comb overs.
Yeah, it's
all
just
sort of combined.
Right. You got a couple different angles of long hair. Right. If it rained on him, it would be really, really weird. He'd look like an aging, like, acid rock star, you know, where they've got just the stringy hair that's, you know, like, going down the side. They go, oh, don't I still look cool? That sort of thing. It would be like...
coming out of a swimming pool.
It'd be like anime spikes, how they have the spiky hair, but down.
Yes, down, and one side longer than the other.
Mm-hmm.
It would change his image. He would lose 15 points of popularity if people saw his hair wet. And he knows it, and that's why he wears a hat. That's when he goes into a rainy situation. He's still wearing the USA hat indoors. He wears that awkwardly. He wears the windbreaker with the presidential seal on it,
mm-hmm.
which all the presidents do.
Mm-hmm.
I never understood that. Yeah, we get it. You are the president. I didn't like it when Barack Obama did it, or George W. Bush was okay wearing it. It always seemed like it was a baseball jacket to me when he was wearing it.
It suited him.
But all the rest of them, and Reagan, it was okay. But I don't like when guys like on it. Like Clinton wore it. Any guy who didn't go to Vietnam intentionally wears the thing with the seal of the president on it. It troubles me. So he's up. He's got that. He's got the windbreaker, and he's got the formal white shirt underneath it. You know, like the button down, full button down shirt with the collar,
the business shirt,
business shirt. And you're like, you can't, like, you don't want a sports shirt. And he's got then the hat on, and then the hat has to stay on that goes down over his ears. I don't understand.
Yeah. Well, in Kraft's case, you wonder, is the delay because he thinks he's going to fight these charges and he might get some high-powered attorneys that makes, I don't know, can they go away? Is that possible without pleading guilty to that charge? I suppose so. But then you wonder, what we were talking about earlier, I think, is the other issue. As soon as that happens, because NFL's been like, well, let's see how this plays out. We're going to see how this plays out. We take this seriously. But once it does play out, what do they do to a Robert Kraft? How do they punish him, or do they punish him? People reminded that the Indianapolis Colts owner was suspended for 6 games, pleading guilty to a DWI charge.
Yeah, right.
So what happens here?
I think you got to give him a season off. Got to send a message? I guess give him a season off.
Yeah, but it's the NFL, so they just don't do anything normal.
That's true.
In terms of
not known for their great decisions over there.
I mean, even if they do something, what's the big deal? He just sits in a suite anyways. Instead, he could sit at his mansion and watch on his big screen TV. You know? Like, what are they really going to do to an owner? You're suspended 8 games. Cool. I guess I'll just watch it at home.
Give we'll fine you rings. $1 million.
Well, you don't get to go and you care. Can't entertain your, you know, your other clients for your other business. You don't get to do all the schmoozing. The end is embarrassing because, listen, this video, God forbid this videotape ever sees the light.
You're just worried about that, aren't you?
I am beside myself.
Would you guys watch it if it surfaced?
No!
No.
It's exactly the sound she made last night.
Yes, right with that.
It's exactly what she said last night.
I really found something else I'm passionate about.
Right, when
Vancouver scored in overtime, yeah. Like 15 seconds in.
Yeah, that was it. All right, all I want to say is that they got to take the Bobby Kay off the special. They also have to take a knee off the special, too, at the Orchids Invasion.
Oh, jeez.
I'd like to point out, hold on. Right now, caller number 19, 312-981-7200. You win a pair of tickets to the Hawks taking on the Avalanche Sunday, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com. All right. We have got Kim telling us what's coming up in the news.
Roe, the FBI thwarts an attack at a Northwest Indiana grocery store.
And the Blonsis right here, 720 WGN.
You see, remember the crying kid from Northwestern? When the March Madness thing happened, right. The Northwestern lost to Gonzaga, and he was...
2 years ago.
2 years ago, exactly. Pizza Hut, did you see this? They'd offer him a new ad for March Madness and pay him some dough to relive that. And he wants to donate it to charity, too.
Oh,
so
his agent's not going to donate his cut though to charity. Baby darling, sweetheart, Bubby, listen, I can't actually do it. I can't actually donate anything.
Isn't that Jim Phillips' son, right?
Yeah.
I remember you telling us that story. Yeah. It just feels like yesterday. It's 2 years ago. It was incredible. He looked so cute and was so in pain, right? In anguish over the whole thing.
He looked like Lauren last night after.
Yes, just like Lauren, as it sounds, as it turns out.
Don't make fun of us weaklings.
Passionate.
Yeah. It turns out she's also a White Sox fan. So we'll just have to see how wonderful or long the season is for Lauren this year. I don't know if she has the same. Baseball's a little different thing because the action in hockey, when you're watching hockey, you get into it and you do start to, you physically tense up.
Right, and you mm-hmm. match the pace of the game.
Right. Baseball, it's the, you might wake up after you know, when you hear the crack of the bat. Wait, what? Oh, yeah!
Taking a nap in the bleachers?
Yep.
You think you're about to get hit, so you kind of jolt awake even more.
Right. Where's that ball? Attack. Where is it? Poor Steve Bartman found out the hard way what that's all about. All right. Oh, and speaking of all that, mm-hmm. don't forget to join us for a pre-baseball season extravaganza next Wednesday. Harry Carey's Italian Steakhouse, 33 West Kinsey in Chicago, Kinsey and Dearborn. We are going to be there from 4 to 7 p.m. It is the 21st annual Worldwide Toast to Harry Carey, and it's a Prohibition-era theme. So if you'd like to dress in Prohibition-era attire,
mm-hmm.
one can. Unfortunately, we will be as well.
We'll be dressed up in costume.
Seen your costume?
Now I have. Yeah, okay. I've seen the costume. We're all sort of wearing the gangster pinstripes or the flapper girl outfits. But I'm doing sort of like a female.
Don't tell anybody.
All right. Okay. All right. We're trying to not reveal it. Right. All right. It's all a big secret. Right.
They'd be very disappointed to see me and Kev. But the ladies will look fetching. It'll all be fine. Don't worry about it. It's all good. Go to wgnradio.com/events. All brought to us by Budweiser. How about that? All right. Now. It is time, as we do every day at 5 o'clock.
It's the top 5 on the Rokan Show.
5. Let's go. 4, 3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Get on with it.
tagging in at
number five.
The new Attorney General Kwame Raoul tried to get the Supreme Court to take a look at the sentencing of Jason Van Dyke, the Illinois Supreme Court. But the Illinois Supreme Court said, nope, we're not going to do it. And here's Kwame Raoul reacting.
I think the public expects our Constitution and our laws to be applied. And the lack of explanation leaves us questioning whether or not People v. Lee is law, whether or not a trial court is obliged to sentence an act consistent with Supreme Court precedent. Very clearly stated in both Justice Kilbride and Justice Neville's dissent is that a trial court constitutionally is not free to ignore a Supreme Court precedent. I believe that's the law. No, I've got to believe that the other justices on the court believe that that's the law as well.
I have never heard an attorney general at the state or federal level.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a law school professor right there.
Really? Sounds very, very academic.
Very like the paper chase.
Mm-hmm.
As Kevin would say, nerd alert, just tell us what's really going on here. We don't know what those cases are, attorney general. But it was very well stated. I mean, by the time you're done with it, you go, oh, well,
he knows his stuff.
He must be right.
He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah. But,
well, they're going for a harsher prison term, and it seems that this was their best legal option to do that, if not only legal avenue, and it's seems to be dead.
Like the judge did, apply the laws. He applied them in reverse order, essentially. He didn't. Listen, I'm not going to try to explain it. Kwame Raoul just did it. He's the legal mind. Call him. You can
call him.
Yeah,
he understands it.
Checking in at
number four.
President Trump slammed John McCain again. Why? Why? His latest round of attacks on the deceased former senator and American hero. President during a pool spray today at the Oval Office. There's a Brazilian president sitting next to him. Kristen Welker from NBC asked the president why he keeps on attacking McCain months and months after his death.
I'm very unhappy that he didn't repeal and replace Obamacare, as you know. He campaigned on repealing and replacing Obamacare for years. And then he got to a vote and he said thumbs down. And our country would have saved $1 trillion and we would have had great health care. So he campaigned. He told us hours before that he was going to repeal and replace. And then for some reason, I think I understand the reason, he ended up going thumbs up. And frankly, had we even known that, I think we would have gotten a vote because we could have gotten somebody else. So I think that's disgraceful. Plus, there are other things. I was never a fan of John McCain, and I never will be.
Yeah. Now, a couple things happened there. That was a crappy bill, remember? There were a lot of people, a lot of conservatives that were like, oh, no, this is not, because there was no guarantee of anything in the bill, including health care. And the president likes to, everything is great and fabulous as you're trying to sell it. But that doesn't mean it really is great and fabulous. And that's why John McCain went thumbs down, because he did not trust. And there were a lot of conservatives that were really, a lot of Republicans that were actually were relieved. They took the vote for it, hoping it wasn't going to go through, because they didn't want to be hamstrung by it in an election when people started to get cheap insurance that didn't do anything for them. And that was really the concern. And we still haven't fixed this problem.
No. Still a problem.
Yes. Still a problem. Major problem. Then the president was out in the White House Rose Garden, and he said this about social media.
Well, we have to do something. I tell you, I have many, many millions of followers on Twitter, and it's different than it used to be. Things are happening. Names are taken off. People aren't getting through. You've heard the same complaints. And it seems to be if they're conservative, if they're Republicans, if they're in a certain group, there's discrimination and big discrimination. I see it absolutely on Twitter and Facebook, which I have also, and others I see. But I really focus more on the one platform.
Mm-hmm. How are they discriminating against him?
He seems to be pretty active, and
yeah,
everything seems to be working for him. Devin Nunes is the one who's suing for $250 million for shadowing or banning conservative viewpoints.
Well, no. He's suing, claiming. He's not. His lawsuit is based on this. that there are two sites, there are two Twitter handles that are mocking him, that are claiming to be, one claims to be his cow,
right?
Devin Nunez's cow, commenting, and another one claims to be his wife or something, or his mother, claims to be his mother. And these are parody sites, they're parody accounts. And so the parody laws allow you to, you know, go ahead and make fun of public figures, essentially. And he wants to take that on. And the $250 million is a, you know, he's trying to send a shot across the bow. It's going to get kicked out of court the minute that, you know, a judge is going to toss it. But he's, you know, he wants to make a stand because they want to keep this notion that social media is against conservatives. But social media is a platform, right? What is it? I don't understand the thing. If you want to buy placement in social media, anybody can buy placement in social media. Now, there's a difference between a conservative and being a crazy racist killer, too.
True.
Right? When people say crazy against terms of service kinds of things, that isn't being a conservative, that's being an a-hole. And when people act like that, the social media organizations do, no matter what it is, there's very clear terms of service. You can't threaten humanity. You can't threaten violence. You can't be expository about sexual acts or excretory acts. And that's the way it is.
He also is seeking to figure out who is behind those two accounts that were trolling him so severely. No. So that's part of the lawsuit, is the disclosure piece of this.
I'm going to get even with them. When we take over. He was the guy that ran to the White House, you know, for the secret meeting about the, you know, it was the first guy, the House Intelligence Committee guy. All right.
Probably, like, unlikely to go anywhere, though. You're right, this lawsuit.
Devin Nunez's cow is a very funny Twitter feed. The cow is very upset because Devin Nunez is a Central California farmer, right? Isn't that his whole bit? Mm-hmm. He likes to stand in front of a tractor when he's giving a press conference. Look at me, I'm a farmer. Yeah. And here's my cow. All right, let's check in with Kevin, or not Kevin. What about, you know, I am having a stroke today. I would like to point that out. Let's check in with Kim, find out what's coming up at the bottom of the hour, and then Lauren will do the traffic. And maybe Kevin, whatever his last name is, might do the sports a little bit later on.
Burials set to begin for the victims of the mosque attack in New Zealand.
Watch for Chicago's very own stories with Micah and Joe, Micah Mater and Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock. Your boy Joe.
Yep, he's our boy.
Love that guy.
Oh, God, he's the best.
You and Kev just doesn't have much time for you, and that's okay. Some friends don't.
Kev and I are wheels up on Friday as we're heading off to Arizona. You'll be hearing me and Mr. Cochran doing a broadcast on Saturday morning from Glendale, Arizona, and then Mr. Cochran and I will be doing appearing as guests on the Sunday Sox game broadcast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
During some of the early innings, because we have a golf match we got to get to. And
I just got a phone call from someone today frantically. So are we golfing Sunday or what? What's the deal here? I'm like, calm down, man. We'll figure it out.
I mean, Pat Brady.
Pat Brady.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. He's already.
He's called me like seven because Pat loves Arizona. He went to college out there.
So he's meeting you guys out there?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's,
try to behave, you guys. Okay. Try to act in a way that's befitting of the show.
Well, here's the problem, because it's me and Kevin, Steve Cochran, and Dave Ennett.
Okay.
And Dave Ennett. Brings
totally.
All the
class
and sanctity to mm-hmm. the presentation here when the rest of us are kind of like goofs. I think Cochran doesn't really care about much of it. You know, sort of like, yeah, okay, yeah, whatever. It's going to be fun. We're going to hang out. He's, you know, he's very low-key about this stuff. Kevin and I are like, yeah, let's party. Oh, it's going to be great.
Can't wait. I love Arizona. I'm actually super pumped for this trip.
So we're doing that over the weekend, and then somehow we're going to be able to squeeze in the Friday and the Monday show. We'll just have to see how that works out.
Good luck.
Yeah.
I'll be a little sunburnt Monday, a little bit tired.
Yeah. You'll be hearing me for seven straight days on this radio station, whether you like it or not.
I wonder what animals will attack you on the golf course. Every time you golf, there's always a story about an animal. Ducks, geese, alligators.
Out there, they've got the scorpions.
Oh, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice thing. When you are standing there and a scorpion walks up behind you.
Oh, I would freak out.
Yeah. Like, I don't.
What do you do when that happens?
I run and scream like a 4 year old. And I start to run like a 4 year old too, my arms out and my feet going and went, like holding my arms up, waiting for my mom to pick me up.
Calling for the ranger to come help you.
I would have guessed fetal position.
No, you're right. In the fetal position, that just gives it more area to sting.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't want that. I'm still in the top 5 of 5. What am I doing? Hold on.
I don't know. Why?
Number three.
You
know what? I don't know what happened last night.
Find some of Judy's old edibles or something?
I don't know. I'm having a problem. Legal recreational marijuana in Illinois could drive demand as high as 550,000 pounds a year of the stuff. Far more than the state's licensed growers can supply, according to a consulting firm. That's the name of the firm. The possibility of full marijuana legalization has stirred up a robust lobbying effort where many of the state's 16 licensed growers who have said that, absent proof to the contrary, they believe that they are capable of meeting demand. Teresa Haley of NAACP Illinois chapter president told reporters today that they are against recreational marijuana. What?
We know that our state representatives and senators are going around the state of Illinois talking about the great things that they can do and the funding that's going to come from this. But we see it as a negative as it relates to black and brown people, especially people living in poverty and below poverty levels.
Why?
What? What's she talking about?
Hmm.
One of the things that they're talking about doing is putting marijuana bars in lounges in our communities. That's predominantly black and brown communities with poor people. That further has a negative impact. So it's a concern for us.
Huh? All right, checking in at
number two.
Video of a woman's racist rant at a supermarket in Connecticut is continuing to make rounds on the internet. The incident happened at a ShopRite, and a little bit of it was captured on video.
Go ahead, I will. Sit down. Don't you dare talk to me in front of my kids like that, mother. What? It's right.
She said the N-word, and look out. Then all of a sudden, it was on like Donkey Kong at that moment. Now, it turns out that this woman got identified by a public school system as an employee there.
Oh, gee.
She has been fired. She was an administrator, actually, in a school system. Here is her call to 911.
I was just at ShopRite, and I was with my two kids walking down the front center aisles in front of the registers, and I said, "Oh Jesus Christ!"
I'm sorry.
And
can you
hang up? Got up in front of me. No, don't you dare put me on hold.
Hello.
Hello. Don't put me on hold again.
Okay, I'm sorry. You are at Stop and Shop.
The center
where?
Aisle of the front in front of the registers, and I said, "Oh Jesus Christ!" I was talking to my kids, and this black guy got up in front of me and said, "Are you talking to me?" And I said, "No, I'm not." And now they're telling me I'm racial profiling.
At least you just made it worse there.
But I do like the urgency of the 911 center. Excuse me, ma'am. Let me put you on hold.
I love that.
Right, suicide prevention line. Please hold. You know, it's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Everybody's an idiot in this story. Everybody.
Everyone gets the prize.
Yeah, all right. That's it.
The top 5 at 5.
Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis.
Yes. One of our favorite people here to talk politics.
Political director of the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis.
Unpaid position.
Is here. And it's John Fritchie, former county commissioner, former state rep. I mean, he's been in politics for more than half of his life.
Sure, he knows where a couple bodies are buried.
Mm-hmm. And he also knows about politics. Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this question, Commissioner, or however you like to be referred to, Your Honor.
I've been called worse.
I've noticed that Lori Lightfoot, there's a lot of momentum behind Lori Lightfoot. People come up to me on the street, they're like, "Oh, Lori Lightfoot's going to win this thing, right?" And I'm like, well, she's leading in the polls for sure.
By a lot.
But the question that I now have is I've noticed a sophistication to her campaign. Both her campaign on the air, her television spots are between good and great. This new one, I think, is great, where she's got
excellent.
Her kid in the background, you know, not paying any attention to her, which I think is really a very funny spot. And I thought the one that was kind of a recreation of her election night speech was also very effective. I'm not seeing a ton of effective Tony Preckwinkle spots that are out on the air right now. Where is this, for a first-time comer, where is this sophistication coming from?
I think it's coming from a twofold. The campaign has a focus now, as does she. The way she came out of the first round, she was the front runner. And if you act like the front runner, you start to get seen like the front runner. And I think that's where she is. You know, as I tell people talking about the NCAA tournament, she was like the 12 seed that nobody expected to, totally. You know, to advance in the
Sleeper.
Beginning. As she came through, she finished flawlessly at the end of the first round, and she has really been, at the risk of torturing the example, she's been playing error-free basketball, and you're at the stage now, all you have to do is, you know, not hurt yourself, not make easy mistakes, and she's been doing that. She's staying on point. She's connecting with people, and I think the more people that hear her, either directly or on debates and forums, they start to say, hey, you know, there's something here.
She brings some more support to her side. I always said that about her, though, having been aware of her work over the years and having covered things that she's done with police board, et cetera, that she is someone who, if you're looking for someone who's not establishment part of the machine, is that she's, if you feel like there needs to be some reform to that entire system, she was someone to take a look at. But she didn't fundraise all that well in the primary. Now she surged ahead of Preckwinkle in addition to in the polls, in addition to the endorsement race. She's winning that one as well.
You know, and the momentum is clearly there. And we said this, the three of us talked about this a couple times in the first round. People already knew who Tony Preckwinkle was. They liked her or they didn't like her. And you saw her numbers stay fairly steady. You know, you're seeing Lori Lightfoot's numbers continue to trend up. And you hit on a word that I think is really important. They're trying to define this, or some folks are trying to define this as who's more progressive. The voters at this point aren't looking at who is more progressive because there's not a lot of room between the two of them. But who represents reform? Who's the new person here? And that's what I think voters are really looking for right now. It's not just that it's an African-American female mayor. It's somebody who is qualified, smart, and not somebody who they've seen before. And I think that's going to carry a potent force going forward. On the flip side, you know, Tony Preckwinkle is going to bring the organizational support. She'll have a strong ground game. Strong enough, probably
okay.
not.
That's a really important point. I want to stop on that because it's one thing to have an air war. And clearly, do you know who the people are who are helping Lori Lightfoot in terms of her commercial work and all of that? I mean, are these sophisticated political advertising people?
These are people who know what they're doing. And if you look at Lori's here. The current commercial running right now with her daughter, I think, is genius.
It is.
It's different. People remember it. It's not the same old thing.
Yeah, turn that around, as you know. I mean, you've done a lot of TV commercials for your campaigns. That's hard to turn that around quickly, right? I mean, you have to get the spot written, the idea for, you know, fomented, written, and then produced, and then bought. And that takes weeks and weeks and weeks. And this seems to be a turn of a dime idea for her, because you can only do this if you're now a clear front runner.
That's the key point too. The fact that she's going to that ad with 2 weeks out, you know, says that they're feeling good about where they're going, and this is going to help burnish in the image of her as somebody that you can connect to, and
right.
not again, you know, not a retread of what you keep seeing again.
Not just a smart federal prosecutor who seems to know her way around some of the city departments in terms of her police experience, but is somebody human. And then her message comes through, like, nothing's going to distract me from creating real change in the city. And then her daughter's behind her playing the trumpet and dancing around the room and trying to distract her. And then bring the light to Chicago is the tagline. I guess that it also may be a part response to Preckwinkle's folks who have been trying to paint her as a greedy corporate lawyer who cares about big business interests over little people. And this shows, look, she's in her Logan Square apartment. She's chilling with, and she looks human, like warm.
Right. It's a lot easier for Lori to paint Tony as with the sins of the Cook County Democratic Party, as it may be, of old school machine, than it is for Tony to try to have Lori pay for the supposed sins, for lack of a better word, of her law firm. And so that's what you're starting to see right now. And going back to what you said with the production values of the camp of the commercials. It's important because she does need to get by the fact that she's a newcomer. She needs to show that, hey, I'm polished, I'm ready to go, I can hit the ground running.
Right. But if you're behind, you don't run that spot. And no. That's the thing, is that she had to know when she was, when they were producing that spot up, that, you know, whoever these, the sophisticates behind her campaign are, had to know that they have to place at the right time. And then you got to have a closer spot, which is going to be her making her final appeal at some point. And to do this, it just seems like everything has gone her way. And I know there are no accidents.
Well, again, error-free basketball. She finished up clean. She's continued to amass endorsements. The Garcia endorsement is great for her. The Wilson endorsement is going to help her as well. And people are starting to see her as the credible alternative. Turnout's going to be a question. She needs that high turnout. There will be a base.
Which she?
You know what? It's nice to have to clarify
Isn't
that
it?
In a mayoral race.
When's the last time that's happened? Never.
No, Lightfoot's going to have to make sure that she can get her voters out and excited to come out. Because when you look at where some of the runoff elections are,
yeah.
And the people that Preckwinkle can still draw on, and some of the labor unions that are behind her have a lot of bodies to put out into the field. So they will be out there. Low turnout election helps Preckwinkle. The higher the turnout is, I think the more that breaks for Lightfoot.
You know, progressives, this whole idea of the young progressives coming out, in really rare elections throughout the nation, has that actually happened? You haven't seen gigantic numbers of that. But here in Chicago, do you think you'll see that for an off election? This is not Brooklyn in the fall of 2018 with AOC. This is a you know, a different thing. People don't even realize that it's 2 weeks from today.
Yes, right. And that early voting started yesterday in all of the wards. And so, yeah, the game is on right now. But going back to what we had spoken about before.
But where do you do the early voting? You don't go to your polling place. You're going to
Not to your polling place. Each ward will have a site set up, and then you've got the downtown super site that's always available. But with respect to the progressives coming out, I think a lot of progressives may not be that incentivized to come out because they say, hey, you know what? Lightfoot, progressive. Preckwinkle, progressive. So it's not as if that's going to be the delineating factor. Again, I think it's going to be much more change than substantive issues.
The reporters have been all asking the Preckwinkle camp, why pull your TV at this point? You're so close to the election. You've got some dough to spend. Why would you possibly do it? Their side says it's strategic. How does that strategic? Aren't we down to the nitty-gritty?
Like strategery to me than strategic.
Well, you know, if it's strategic, I will say that it's a whole new strategy that I haven't seen before. For them to go dark on the air right now raises a lot of questions. And what it does, too, if you look at the newspaper coverage of it today, if you look at the fact that we're talking about it, the fact that she's going off the air for a few days raises questions. You know, do they feel a weakness? Are they getting short on resources?
Are people pulling their money? Is the money drying up? That's the question. What do you think?
Well, you know, it's tough to tell. I mean, if you look,
what do you really think?
I think that Lightfoot is raising money at a far better clip than people anticipated.
Answered that the way only a politician can.
No,
answer is yes. Her money's drying up,
and a lot of Preckwinkle's big money folks, they've already come in, and so you know it's tough for them if they see a race that's got a.
So you switch to ground game now. You take all your resources and you throw it at ground game. You throw it at making sure that pastors. Have a new car in the driveway, and that everybody has got the stuff that they're the kinds of old school machine Chicago politics that you're going to need to have here, including people pounding on doors or knocking on doors. You pound on doors, I think it scares the voters, but that's what you're going to need, right?
Well, I think that's what you're going to need, but keep in mind that the aldermen are going to be practical creatures as well. And they're looking at these polling numbers. They're looking at who they may be serving with next. And so if they see, you know, in fact, where Preckwinkle has a high uphill mountain to climb, they may be cautious to be too visibly behind her.
All right. And the ward races, you're seeing a lot of television ads. I know they're buying cable, but they're buying ads in the O'Connor race. Right. This is old school Chicago politicians, been in the city council for 30 something years, and against an insurgent, right? Progressive insurgent in the ward.
Former battle rapper, as I said, and that's been getting used against him. That is a classic type of matchup in a ward that still has some very distinct sections. You have a lot of older voters in that ward.
Like Lincoln Square area, right?
A little north of there as well.
Yeah.
And so you do have the folks that have been there for a long time, more traditional voters. They know Alderman O'Connor. You've got a lot of gentrifying areas and some very liberal areas and progressive areas in that ward as well. So, again, the ward-only runoffs, those are really going to be about turnout.
Okay. You know, so last night I happened to run into a lot of suburbanites who are very concerned about what's going to happen here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a thing. They're not going to be able to vote, and they feel sort of a little bit like a Christian Scientist with appendicitis. They're like, oh, I don't know what to do here. I can't do anything about this, but it's starting to hurt. So the question that I'm asked more than anything else is, who's better with JB wanting to raise taxes and all that, and will there be a commuter tax, and you know, how's this going to affect suburbanites? What's a good answer for suburbanites who are very concerned?
Well, the reality is that there are going to be revenue needs by the city coming forward. There's no two questions about that, just operationally with respect to the pensions still coming due. So there are going to be taxes. Obviously, the responsible thing to do as the mayor and city council is, what taxes can we raise that are going to hurt people the least, that they're going to be the least noticeable? So, you know, that's where suburbanites have to start to worry about that.
Right.
You know, voters in Chicago going to be very wary, whether it's water tax, property tax, bag tax, on and on. They've really had it with that, and these aldermen are going to have to tread carefully, and it'll be interesting with a lot of the new aldermen coming in who have a lot of ideas for new social programs when they realize that those programs cost money as well.
And where's it going to come
from? There's going to be a lot of pressures.
Yeah, they just had to explain that to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, that social programs actually cost money. And she's like, well, we just print money and we'll have it, right? I mean, that's the answer to everybody who is not never done this before. And it's going to be very, very interesting. All right. Our political director, John Fritchie, has explained the world to us.
Thanks, John Fritchie.
Thank you, as always.
Kept his powder a little dry. I knew where he was going. Had to read between the tea leaves there for a moment. But she's,
as always,
Tony Preckwinkle's money is drying up. That's my, I stand by it.
Next week will be my election prediction. I'll give you the final numbers.
Final numbers.
All right. What's the latest poll between Lori and Tony right now that you've seen?
I candidly have not seen a poll in about a week.
Okay.
And so at that point, it's really old news at this point.
Still 50 high to 40 low.
58 to 30 was the one I saw, but that was
very... The teaser right now is that I see this easily being a double-digit win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can tell you right now it's a 60-40 win. I can tell you that right now. All right. I'm going to go 48-42, 40, and then another 2% of me writing myself in. All right, here we go. Here is Kim telling us what's coming up at the top of the hour.
Another arrest in the Netherlands attack.
Rocon Show with Anna DeVlantis right here, 720 WGN. A bit of a Reiki of the shaky cruise.
Reiki? I think we need to do one of those. Is there a test you can do on someone who's kind of losing their memory slowly? We need to come up. We need to find that test.
Oh, my God.
You can remember Kevin's last name earlier?
That was because that was a technical reason. So, you know, sometimes you run into somebody that has the same name. Well,
yeah,
for the same first name,
kind of,
and then all
name.
Of a sudden you're about to say the same, you know, it's just that thing. Kevin's not sitting right in front of me. I have to look at a TV screen to see Kevin. And he's in a little box.
I know, but you know his name.
You've known Kevin
for a long time.
I know, but it can happen. I'm not completely demented.
No, because you remember what day it snowed in 1975.
Right, I remember that, but that's what happens.
This is what how it starts. You
is
remember
that what
like useless information.
The first to go.
Yeah.
The short term?
Yeah.
Do you see how important you are, Kevin?
Right. I feel important after all this.
I am sick and tired, Andrea, of you saying this to me.
Oh, no.
Oh, wait. No, you're not Andrea. Who are you? Which one are you?
It's Kim.
Actually, no. If I start referring to anybody here as, like, you get confused between your wife and your kids, you know, that kind of thing happens.
Or you mix up your children.
You mix up your children, right.
Or you call the dog your kids' names and vice versa. I do
my
that.
Mom's been doing that my whole life.
I do that. It's terrible.
Kevin, Ryan, Chad.
Like, Blossom, get over here.
I don't know. I am having one of those days, though. I think I'm. I think I suffered the same sort of petite mal seizure last night as our traffic reporter Lauren Lapka did, because when the Hawks lost in 16 seconds in overtime, there was like this moment where you're like, oh no, I saw my whole life pass before my eyes at that moment.
It was deflating.
Yeah.
And yet it took quite a while to register what really happened.
Because they had not over it. They had just scored with, 3 minutes left, right, in the third period?
That, yeah,
to tie up the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had this feeling like, okay, this is a destiny moment here. They're coming back. It's like the good old days of 2015 and 13 and 10, where you just knew they were going to win, no matter how crazy it was. In 2015, there was some crazy stuff in 2015, some come from behinds that they had to have, and they did. And so I had that thought. And then for the game to end in the way that it did, with on a single rush, win the faceoff and then a single rush down the ice and was over, you're like, oh, no. And then I think that's when I couldn't feel the right side of my face. Now, what does that tell
there
me?
There you go. That's, we can trace it back to that moment. Because it's been a rough day. It really has for you,
Ro. Yes, it has. Yeah, it has.
Maybe you had one of those little TIAs.
I might have. I might have. Kind of think, oh, look at what happened to Grandpa.
Or maybe it's just dangerous. The booze from last night.
It could have been that, too. It might have been. It's a sort of a combination. You know, Monday drinking is not a good idea, kids.
Make Mondays great again, Ro.
That's what Kevin's new plan is for me. I don't know how I'm going to be able to do that and survive.
I don't think so.
All right. Reminding you that if you would like to get decked out for the summer, you got to go to WGNRadio.com/contest. You could win from Architect of Chicagoland a brand new 12-by-16-foot rectangular deck made of TimberTech product. You also get from American Sail a 3-piece cushion sectional and fire pit table, as well as from Weber, their Weber Spirit 2 gas grill. Wow, that's a pretty, this is all, it all adds up to about $19,000 in value. And all you got to do is go on the interwebs, WGNRadio.com/contests, and all the rules are there. You upload a picture of your current existing outdoor space, whether you have a deck or not, just what it is you'd like to get updated. And you could win, and we will do it for you, all brought to you by Architect of Chicagoland. All right.
We don't have to actually do it. I don't do physical labor all that well, Ro.
No, we do not have to.
Okay, we'll just stand around and watch them.
We'll come and throw a party on your deck.
That was originally part of the idea, and then we were thinking, what would happen if the people didn't want us to throw the party on the deck?
That's the problem. Yeah, no, I'll just take the deck. Thanks.
No, thanks.
You have to understand how this works in radio. You know, there was a meeting, right? And there was like a bunch of guys sitting around in a conference room.
I know.
So here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna have a contest. You can win the Architect people were sitting there. Kristen and David Berryhill were sitting in this meeting.
Such lovely people.
I will never forget the expression on their face when it was like, and then what we'll do is we'll have the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis go out and throw a party on the deck. And they're like, and they're looking at each other.
Like, no.
Like, nobody wants that.
I've heard the stories about how they anger the neighbors and they cause like a problem.
Will I have to throw a whole party for this show?
On the deck. We bring our own music. It's
right,
great.
Right.
Attractive.
Really,
you've
really
won
great.
The prize. Now throw a party.
Law
for
enforcement and the whole thing. And they're like, I don't think this is a good idea. How about they just win the deck?
Right.
I said, well, if they don't want it, then maybe we'll do like a block party. And then they were like, what if the block doesn't want it? Let's just have them win the deck.
Just give them the deck. It's a pretty damn good prize.
It really is.
They got the deck, the furniture, the grill. They got the whole thing. And then there, was another genius in the meeting. He's like, you know what we should do?
Another genius.
We should then maybe choose a community event space to do a party celebrating these people's deck. And they're like, what?
That's not a good idea.
Yeah, like go to like a local theater or something and do a show celebrating these people's deck. That's really not the perfect thing. Even now, the Berryhills, I finally went over to their side on this one. I'm like, you people are idiots. Let them just win the deck.
Good. I really want to see a photo montage of the deck. Just like slowly to nice, soft music.
That's all you want, right? It's just, congratulations, you won
the
deck.
Perfect party.
Right, here's your thing. You do not want to see us on the deck because we're going to ruin everything. And honest to God, I mean, the people who are going to win this are probably they're WGN listeners. They're probably very nice. They probably live in a quiet community somewhere. It does not need this kind of riffraff, show folk showing up and, you know, a police attention and then, you know, a crazy neighbor who's going to show up or you know, some...
Report you to the Homeowners Association.
Right, exactly. Or, you know, somebody who's like that lady that we had on yesterday who wants a dictator in America showing up and yelling at you. There's always somebody in the neighborhood like that.
You don't want that.
Set the fake media over there, right. Jim, behind you.
Exactly. Bunch of, you know, guys in leather vests with all kinds of patches on them and their motorcycles going around in a circle in front of the driveway protesting us. I don't need any of that. They don't need any of that.
Just the deck.
Long story short, yeah.
So the bottom line is you're just getting a deck.
Right.
You're getting the furniture. You're getting the fire pit.
The grill.
And you're getting, and it's almost $19,000, I think, by the time you're done.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So I think that's the deal. $19,000 in value. All right. I think we got that worked out.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think it's pretty clear.
Back there, the story I am telling myself right now is that in our conference room, there's another meeting like that going on as we speak.
He didn't like the community party idea. Did you hear that? It did not go fly away.
Scratch it.
Take it off the whiteboard and let's brainstorm.
Right. That's right. They're brainstorming. They're meeting with a crematorium right now and talking about how they're going to do a promotion.
It's all going to work out.
All right, Ro, we have this idea. We need you to just get in the box, and we're going to pretend to cremate you, but we won't actually cremate you.
And then we throw a party at a listener's house.
Right, and then we'll...
How about throw a party over the cremation?
And then you come back to life. And we're going to do this over Easter weekend.
Oh, my God.
At somebody's house.
No.
And you're like, no, I don't think that's a good idea. I really don't think that's a good idea. We'll call it the Easter contest. You're going to love it. Oh, God.
Yeah, no.
No. No.
Nope.
There's, you know, they have been encouraged to think out of the box back there.
Yeah, that can work out sometimes.
Yeah, in the offices. I get it. They had a manager who goes, there are no bad ideas. Yeah, no, there are.
We've heard a couple.
Are bad ideas.
I just remember the day that whole thing unfolded. I was just sitting back watching all of it.
Yeah, it's, yes, something. Something to watch here. Not everyone's a winner, but I can tell you this. I can tell you this one is.
This prize is a winner.
The prize is a winner, and this idea is a winner. If somebody gets a deck, it's great.
That's right. Huge.
Why do they have to make it bigger?
It really doesn't have to be bigger.
No.
That's a huge prize, and that's priceless in terms of what it does for your life. To have that whole area like decked out.
You're the cool house now
yes.
on the block.
Yeah. Or just chill out yourself and hang out.
And they have the best crews at Architect, too. They got the... It's amazing how quickly and it's wild to watch. Anybody who's got that construction skill is something I totally covet that ability to do that. They see it, they get it, you know, goes up quickly and
they visualize
sturdy and they know what they're doing and they never seem to get tired, hot or thirsty.
Focused.
And, right. I'm getting thirsty just watching them work. And I'm sitting out there pouring water over my head, just watching them work, and then stepping back into the air conditioning and then going out, pouring water over my head. You guys done yet? Oh, my God.
You get worried you're not going to measure something right, and it won't all stack up right.
Right. I build, whenever I have something I have to assemble, you know, like your IKEA kind of stuff, I always build it backwards first. I don't know what it is, but it's where the doors are going the wrong way.
You put the wrong screws in or something.
Right.
I've been down this road.
The thing is actually backwards, so that it's like one of those like shelving units, except I've left is right and front is back, which actually works if you make it like that. But then it's just going to, the shelves are going to have to be on the wall side, and then the wall is on the room side. It's a bad idea.
It doesn't work. It
doesn't really work out.
Let the pros do it.
Yeah. That's what we're doing.
You can pay a guy to do that for you.
Right. That's what. And we're paying the guy to do it for these people. And I said that's good enough. We do not have to have a blimp fly over and us dangle out of the blimp to land on the deck. Another idea that was scuttled.
All you got to do is send in a deck pic, and maybe you'll be a winner.
Exactly. WGNRadio.com/contests. Well, that was really something, wasn't it? All right, let's check
Great
in now
pitch.
With Kim. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
Some Purdue students boiling about a change to the campus internet.
There you go.
There you have it.
We have a texter who says that they have a door that leads to nowhere, and they live on 5 acres in southwest Chicago, so they need a deck. Take a picture of that space.
Right, exactly. Take a picture, send it in, and let's, I don't know what the rules of the contest are. That was another thing sitting in that meeting where they're trying to come up with the rules of the contest. Like, I got to walk out of
here. Where do you go for the rules?
I don't know. It's on the website.
Oh, okay.
Because again, there's like lawyers in there,
mm-hmm.
and they're all trying to explain to each other what's going on.
Very complicated,
yeah.
But you can figure it out.
I just took the Berry Hills out to lunch, and I'm like, you know what? Let's just leave this room, and when we come back, some cooler heads will have prevailed. But this is what they came. This is what happened. See, you win a deck.
Oh, and you can see deck picks that were submitted already when you go to the contest page.
Oh,
you can see what people sent in for their deck picks. Man, some of these are bad.
Like, that needs a lot of work.
Yeah.
Architect Chicago.
Wow.
This is fun to see.
All right, in the PPG Paints Green Room, we've got Bruno Abate about to join us. Bruno Abate, most famous for saying this.
What time we do sex?
Yes. He is going to be joining us in the... See, he actually asked that.
What? What is the context for that one?
Let me explain.
I've heard it before.
Yes, the context for that is that Tracy Butler was co-hosting with me one day from ABC7, who is, like
probably as innocent,
innocent and lovely a person as you will ever meet, constantly talking about her children, Cody and Cassidy, aww, and about how lovely they are and the whole thing that goes on. And, beautiful, great husband, beautiful marriage, lovely church-going family.
Mm-hmm.
And she was talking about her schedule and about how she has to get up in the middle of the night to work the morning shift on Channel 7 to do the weather and
right,
all of that. And then she gets home, and she picks up the kids, and she does this, and she does that. And her husband is, he's got a company that does physical fitness and what is, blah, 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 blah. And then, by the time it was done, there was no time left in the day. So Bruno says,
what time we do sex?
And then that was, it was just really wrong on every level.
We'll ask him about that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's coming your way. I don't think you're going to miss. It's been a long time since Bruno's been on. He normally comes in for the Canarba Wagon, but he's going to explain he's got a new restaurant in progress right now. And he was a radio personality in Italy. So this is how he works his way into here. It's kind of interesting stuff. Not going to lie to you.
He taught me how to cook pizza in the basement of the Cook County Jail.
Right.
Remember that? I went out there and...
Right.
He does a really cool thing. It's the Culinary Mission for Change, I think it's called.
He was featured on 60 Minutes.
Yeah.
Or as he would say, the 60 Minutes.
They've got a full-blown professional kitchen in the basement of the Cook County Jail where he teaches inmates how to cook. And they crank out pizzas for other inmates. They can order. They have their own pizza shop.
He teaches them kitchen and restaurant skills to nonviolent offenders, mm-hmm, to try to get them into the business when they get out of the slam.
And the pizza's delicious.
Yes, his food is amazing. And I can vouch for that.
And he has a major announcement he is here to make as well. So stay right here. But in the meantime, Kim Gordon brings us the WGN News right now by AppleChevy.com. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis.
Yes.
And joining us in the studio right now, one of my favorites of all times, Mr. Bruno Abate, who is not only one of the greatest restaurateurs this town has ever seen, but philanthropic guy,
mm-hmm,
guy with a heart of gold, who'll give you the shirt off of his back and then sing a song to you while he's giving it to you. And just one of the nicest guys, but he cheats at golf.
Oh.
And that's all I want to say right now.
I heard he's excellent at golf from other sources. And he actually is silky the way he sort of just hits the ball. It's like something to behold. That's what I've heard.
Yes. I often tell this story about meeting Bruno for the first time. It was a completely accidental moment. I was playing golf. I dropped my daughter was in grade school, I think, at the time. And I dropped her off at school in the morning because she had to serve a suspension or something in the school. I can't remember exactly what it was. And so I used to go out to the golf course on the lake here, the public course here on the lake,
right?
Merrivitz. And so I always wanted to get out before the senior league hit. And the, mm-hmm, senior league started at like 7:10. And if I could get there at 7 o'clock straight up, They could go. Mm-hmm.
We were there at 5 o'clock.
Yes. That was, I think, even earlier. And I'm playing golf, playing by myself, and I'm just, you know, I'm out on the course, and there's a guy, another single guy behind me, who's, like, you know, sort of quickly approaching, and he is in fuchsia and pink pants.
And it sounds like Bruno.
And he's got this
very,
like,
fashionable
pro swing, and I'm like, who is this guy carrying his bag?
Mm-hmm.
Who's in the shoes, match the pants, match the bag, match the sunglasses. And I'm like, who is this guy who's coming up behind me? Barely spoke any English. You
right.
were just in the United States. You just landed in the United States, right?
It was, I think it was 2000, probably. Huh?
Yeah, something like that. Maybe even earlier than that.
Maybe earlier.
In the 90s. It was definitely in the 90s. It was like in the 98, 99.
Usually I find there's an inverse relationship between how well a golfer is dressed and how well they golf. But you break that rule, because I've seen the pictures of you on the golf course, Bruno, and wow. I mean, I don't know what they teach you in Italy, but you men know how to dress.
The best part of it, though, is that when he hits a bad shot, he starts swearing at himself in Italian. And we have no idea what he's saying, but we know it's bad. And somehow...
You can tell, can't you?
You really...
A couple of the words,
right.
You know.
Two years ago, I was on Arborside, and I see this guy come with carts so fast. I said, oh my gosh. And he come there and say, I have to tell you, you look like a Christmas tree in a golf course.
That's
my
true.
Yellow pants. And you know, that's how we dress in Europe.
Yeah.
Italy
right.
Special.
And you walk the streets of Italy, you see guys who look like Bruno, and everybody's, he wears a scarf, he wears the thing, and it's without any kind of irony or embarrassment in the United States, like, you know, frat bros and stuff like that, just with a hat on backwards.
Right.
When you're sitting there, like, in a restaurant, and I've seen this happen, I've even seen this happen in your restaurant, a guy comes in with a hat on backwards, Bruno throws him right out. Right out.
I love that.
You're going to have to take the hat off, and you got to go. All right, so look, can we talk about the restaurant here for a second before we get into your philanthropic work, which you were featured on 60 Minutes for doing this. This is an amazing thing. But you Folio, people remember that, which was in the West Loop.
Fulton Market.
And that's now next. Whatever happened to that restaurant, right?
That space has done well.
Then you moved, you're up in Wicker Park at Toco, which was...
For 11 years.
Amazing
Milwaukee Division.
Avenue,
And now Toco's moving.
Toco's moving in Winnetka.
Wow.
Yes.
Very interesting and quite controversial, because it's harder for me to get to. What is the... Where are you going to be in Winnetka?
It's a downtown Winnetka, I would love to talk about the reason why I'm moving.
Okay, let's talk about the reason why you're moving.
Yeah, well, you know, many restaurants close. You know, restaurant business is a dangerous business.
Right,
but,
comes and goes.
For people like me, you know, stable, like, you know, establishing, like, for many years, and it's unbelievable how I spend like $1 million in the place. I pay $1,450,000 in rent. In 10 years, and they just raised the rent like this, boom. Like, you know, from 10,000, 11,000 I was paying a month, now 17, 18,000. I mean, and the place and probably will be empty for maybe 3, 4, 5 years. Who knows? I mean,
that's just the landlord.
It's all the landlord. I mean, they don't give you a break, and that's why, you know, many of people like me, they just go out of business, you know, so easily, and you have to make a different move.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's interesting. In Winnetka, you got a nice space with.
I found a great landlord. It's I think, you know, all the landlords now, they have to change a little bit the attitude with small
business. I think on the North Shore, especially now, too, because property values and stuff like that are stabilized, and they really want growth in the North Shore.
I mean, you go like on Milwaukee Avenue now, there is about 27 place empty. You go on Division, there is like about 30 place empty. Every street you go, there is so much empty place. So small business, really, there is no chance. And the chance is only for a big corporation, and they have millions and millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
I never understand.
You have to have a lot of partners.
Right. I don't understand how this works. Why, when you think about the restaurant business, is like the risk business ever. You know, I mean, there's no other business.
It's really
tough. You know, very tough. And you don't understand how can... Some people spend 30, $4 million to building a restaurant.
I know.
Like, you know.
Let's hope it stays around for a while, right?
And where did the money come from? What's going on?
Well, I mean, what's interesting.
When you get the money back, $34 million, I mean. That's-
and you stop and you think about some of the great, you know, artist chefs in Chicago who don't have the big, I mean, obviously there's guys who've these international profiles now because they've, you know, done cooking shows or they've got cookbooks or whatever it is, and they get all kinds of private equity money, and that's what they, that's how they do what they do. But then in every neighborhood in this city, there are great working everyday, hardworking guys, men and women who invent things and do things that are so spectacular. And a lot of times you got to go BYOB in those places because they can't afford the whole liquor program, even though it's very profitable. It's very expensive to fund to get into and licensing and maintaining and all of that. And, you know, Bruno was always about the wine and stuff like that. You will never have a meal in Chicago, or I would even say in North America, that comes close to being exactly like you would get in Italy in terms of Italian food in the United States. And Bruno always made it. Like, I'll never forget, I came back from being in Italy for 10 days, landed at O'Hare, and I thought, oh my God, because when you're in Italy, every meal is spectacular.
You
right?
feel like you've some. I felt like I was like picking the best restaurant somehow. Like I was doing my research and it was all working. It was everything was great,
right?
And all the wine was great.
You just can't miss, right? And then I went right to my point. Is I landed at O'Hare, I went right to his restaurant because I wanted to eke out one more great Italian meal because of that. Because it's
the
like,
best.
It's not like the American Italian stuff, which is great, but this is it's a very different thing. It's super light. Super.
Well, that's the Italian food is based on ingredient and very light. Olive oil is it's a very important to use a very high quality. Don't bring the olive oil over temperature. Well, that's what is, you know, what people don't understand sometimes. There is the acidity that the food create. You know, when you go into all those places, great, whatever, you get full, but you know. Your stomach starting having problem. You feel it.
And the taste is different, too.
And the taste is different. Why, you know, they use bad olive oil or they don't know how to use the olive oil. Well, it's very important to know how to use. You know, my father used to say, don't buy the Ferrari if you drive like a Ford. Just buy the Ford and buonanotte, you know?
That's true.
So a lot of people buy good ingredients, and then they don't know how to use it.
You know what he taught me, though? Huh. Because Bruno came over, is you know, cooked in my house a couple of times. Just I'll go to his place and cook, because there's nothing like watching a great chef cook. And what I learned is, for cooking purposes, I don't know if you still do, but you were using Greek olive oil. Which was because
not Italian,
which,
huh?
It was interesting because the Greek olive oil had a thicker consistency, right?
It was one time, man.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
It was one
all
time.
He doesn't want to sell out his Italianness.
Right. He doesn't want to do that. But I found that to be very interesting.
Definitely, you know, Greece have a wonderful olive oil. So, yeah. Like everything, you need to understand the quality. Why olive oil is not all good.
True.
It's
a lot of mix and lot of you pressing. It's like the flour, you know. You wash it and you so there is a lot of process. And good olive oil is a cold press, and the first drop, that's the best olive oil. Low acidity. But the trick is, don't bring the olive oil over temperature. When you cook it,
what's the temperature?
The temperature of the oil. Like if I put the oil, like, you know, many people make the garlic gold. Mm-hmm. That's wrong. That's very wrong.
The garlic, when you're putting garlic in the olive oil, the garlic should stay white.
Should stay white. You know, or otherwise you have to just leave the flame very, very low and let the flour, I mean the garlic, flavor of the garlic coming out.
Right, so it just sort of melts into
if the olive oil goes too, like, fry type, you know, and then
too
you
high.
put everything in, whatever, That's bad.
The whole dish gets...
I always mess that up.
I do too. That's why I was asking, because I just heat up the olive oil on the burner and let it go. I thought it had a high flash point.
No, absolutely. There at that point, you're breaking all the substance of the olive oil and become poison. And that's what the acidity. One of the damage of the human is the acidity. More acidity you put in your body, more it's hard to digest, and your body is always like, you know, running. All the organs, you know, so that's, we have to make it.
And he did his own stuff. I mean, you would go to Bruno's Kitchen, and you'll do this also in Winnetka when you, you're opening later this spring, early summer?
Actually, yeah, I hope to open in June, and Winnetka is going to be like an innovation, I would say, in the United States, why no chef in the United States will cook with a silver pan. And you know, I've been passionate about it for many, many years, and I've been cooking with silver pans. So
real silver, not like silver colored, yeah. A pan made out of silver.
Yeah,
because it conducts the heat differently, right?
It's not only about the heat; is about silver is antibacterial.
You know, the antibacterial.
Antibacterial, yeah. Mm-hmm. The antique used to use silver to purify the water one time. Mm-hmm. Now we're using 23 chemicals in Chicago to purify the water. So when you drink the water, there is 23 chemicals inside. The antique used to use the silver power to kill any germs.
How about that?
And how much does one of those pots cost, if I may ask? A silver pan.
It goes between $1,500 to $2,200. It's
quite the investment for the kitchen.
it is an investment. I think about it. You know, all the unstick pan and all those scrap and iron. This is all poison. I mean, this is all bad stuff. So
wow.
And you use. I mean, you use it as soon. You scratch one, you need to throw them away and buy another one, $60. And so in the end, I mean, the silver pen will stay with you for life, and you give it to your children, and the children will give it to your grandchildren.
I'm afraid for you to continue this, because our sales department right now is back in that meeting going, I got an idea.
Bubby.
What we're going to do is we're going to do a silver pan promotion with the Rokan show, and what we're going to do, we're going to cook Roe in a silver pan.
What I want to say that I in Winnetka, I just have like about $35,000 just in silver pan to cook.
Oh, don't say that, because there's thieves in Winnetka. All right, what is the how many seats are you going to have in the restaurant? Do we know yet?
About 55, 60.
So you're doing it's going back to like Folio was with a small room very intimate. Yes. And you're cooking.
Oh, it's outrageously good.
To see him, the prep and cook and stuff, it's just it is a masterful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember once picking him up to, we were going to an event, and it was on a Saturday morning. And I go to his restaurant, and the managers are up there, and they're like, hey, he's downstairs. I go downstairs. He's literally butchering an animal, a small animal.
Well, you're in the meatpacking district there.
In the basement, I had walked across the street, and he's butchering it. And it was, I believe, it was a calf. It was veal. I think
veal. Yeah.
And it was, and watching him with these knives, and I'm like, now I'm worried. Because, you know, I've known him forever, and I'm watching, he's so precise with what is, and you got to know exactly, you know, this is the thing about great chefs. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between cooks and chefs.
Yes.
And great chefs can do almost anything, can make, you know, you could throw an idea at him, and he can make something amazing out of it. So.
And it all comes from experience. You know, 40 years is a lot. So I live in Italy and do a lot of stuff. But
that's amazing stuff. Simple. All right, and we should also mention this, because I don't want to, we're getting late here, and I don't want to get away from this. You and Tom Dart put together a program. This was your idea, but Tom had the foresight to move forward with it and do it. This program at Cook County Jail, which is now a model program for jails across the United States. This is for nonviolent offenders.
Actually.
Yeah. Well, and it sort of came from this idea of Padua, Italy. There's a prison in Padua. There's a federal prison in Padua that does this. and it's sort of they bake, what do they call that bread?
The panettone.
Panettone, right? And they sell it all over the world. And this is a way to give, you know, the pride of accomplishment to people who've never really had the pride of accomplishment of doing something that's illegal. And now here for nonviolent offenders at Cook County Jail, young men and now young women, right?
Yes.
You're now.
I just opened the woman division. It's a beautiful 8,000 square feet. And
state-of-the-art cooking facility, yes. Right?
I've seen it. It looks gorgeous.
Yes.
Have you heard of any of your graduates going on to, after they get out of prison, to pursue the culinary arts?
I've been doing this for 8 years now. So I've been in the Cook County Jail about 6.5 years. Mm-hmm. So we now selling pizza to our inmates, and we are about 1,000 pizza a week.
How much is a pizza in the county jail?
$5 with the flour come from Italy and mozzarella.
And it's unbelievable.
He makes the best pizza.
Right, it's the best pizza you've ever wanted. I'm thinking about becoming an inmate because it's going to cost me about a third of what it would normally cost me. So I like the idea of that.
Save some money.
Well, it's not a taxpayer money, so it's important.
Yes, that's right. That's the way I look at it. Recipe for Change is the name of the organization.
Yes.
Awesome
Recipe for Change.
Really incredible.
Look that up on the internet and you get to see the whole thing. There's great videos. Even Kevin was out there when he was in jail for a short period of time making the pizza.
He likes pizza,
too. Pizza was delicious.
Yeah, it is amazing. All right, Bruno Abate, hold on 1 second. Let's check in with, is it still Cam?
Yes. I live here now.
Yes.
Will Patriots owner Bob Kraft take a plea deal?